It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, a few minutes late, off and running on this 27th day of January, 2022. This is The Horn. Head On .live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. If you pop over there right now, when the program's live, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Ralphs and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stock and Larry, and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave. Must be a pretty nice day out there. Yeah, sorry about being a little bit late to the air. They don't have problems like this at highfalutin broadcast outfits that have, like, you know, multiple restrooms in the building and stuff. And no, there's only one here. And when you gotta wait your turn, you gotta wait your turn, even if it's broadcast time. Did I do the hi, I'm Robin part? Because I am. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so we say thank you for this 27th day of the month to our 27th day of the month subscriber. And what that means is we say thank you. We say thank you to our buddy Robert in Australia. And thanks as well to Cecilia for jumping in on the fundraising effort, the fundraising bandwagon. What we're looking at now, in order to, well, let's just call it 1368. It's 768 and, well, 758. 758, I'm sorry. And to round out the month, $1,368 to finish fundraising for the first month of 2022. And, well, thanks to all of you who keep all of this going. It is. I recognize that every contribution constitutes a sacrifice. I know that, and I'm as grateful as I can be. Thank you so much. Now, that having been said, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we got some big old thorns, and we will be dealing with them as they arise. I just want to take a minute and thank y'all for putting up with my my occasional wackiness. That little laugh fest last night with Scott from San Diego was so good for what passes for my soul. Every once in a while, we all need a good, just gut-busting, can't-stop-laughing little marathon. And that was mine. Pound for... Don't get me... Oh, don't start it again. Don't do it. But it was delightful. And It can never happen. It can never happen too often. And I guess maybe was it yesterday's program where we were talking about the granddad who just about offed his little granddaughter rubbing ivermectin on her on her little 6-month-old feet. Well, Vice has a story, a more fleshed out version of that story about the daddy, Jason, and the granddaddy and the poor little child, and that telegram channel, the cue balls, that advised him to rub ivermectin on the baby's feet. You can find it over at Vice if you want to go and have a look. I just wanted to make it, because some of this stuff you see, and it's like, that can't possibly be, that, no. But it is. It's very much real. And it's so damn dangerous. But there's other stuff out there. Something, you know, things that I didn't get to last night that I want to catch up with, because some of these things are just, they're just too damn much. And we really should not let these things just blow past. You know, I ran across a story, and I had a note from Joe Vecchio along the same lines. This phrase, civil war, keeps bouncing around. And there is someone who, a historian who is, has real expertise in the history of the Civil War in the United States. Her name is Barbara Walter, not to be confused with the doyenne of journalism, Barbara Walters. No, Barbara Walter is a professor at the University of California. She is a Civil War expert insofar as she is an expert on Civil War, not the Civil War, you know, not the blue and the gray, but how societies fall into Civil War. And she said of the maggot side, they don't want democracy anymore. And that's chilling. And she said that America is falling into what she calls the anocracy zone, A-N-O-C-R-A-C-Y. Anocracies are neither fully democratic nor fully autocratic. Their citizens enjoy some elements of democratic rule, like, you know, they get to have elections. While things like due process or freedom of the press go by the boards. This in a piece that was published in the Washington Post. Noting in the Washington Post piece that in the Donald Trump era, as it came to a close, the Center for, I didn't know this. Had you seen this? The Center for Systemic Peace, which is not just some, you know, some post office box in Poughkeepsie. By their calculations, they said that for the first time in more than 200 years, the United States no longer qualified as a democracy, and that over the preceding years of the Trump presidency, we had transformed into an anocracy. When Joe Biden took office, we got back into the democracy zone. I think it's a little bit like relegation from the Premier League in British football, and you know, we've managed to get, you know, we got relegated and now we're back in. But it's that stand by. Sorry, sneezing. That line where, you know, they're not interested in they don't want democracy anymore. She said, citizens do believe what they're hearing, and if they hear it long enough and consistently enough, and if that's all they hear, they absolutely don't think it's a lie. They think it's the truth, which is the very essence of the big lie theory. And then, speaking of the maggots, she said, you know, they're good people. They're trying to do what they think is right. It's the leadership that's cynical. It's the leadership that knows better who's feeding them lies consistently. They're priming their supporters to believe that democracy isn't worth defending because they don't want democracy anymore. And she was interviewed over on CNN. And it's chilling, and I think it jibes with what we've sort of been theorizing here for rather a while. And it goes hand in hand with something that Joe Vecchio sent in earlier today, before airtime. It's a quote from Dr. Barbara F. Walter. How Civil Wars Start and How to Stop Them is the name of the book. And Dr. Walter said, quote, been studying civil wars around the world for 30 years. There's an incredibly rich body of research about who starts civil wars and how they start. And it's not how people think. The people who tend to start wars are not the poorest groups in society. They're not the groups that are most discriminated against or most oppressed. They're not the immigrants. Those groups tend to be too weak and too disempowered to have any chance to organize. The groups that tend to start wars, especially ethnic wars, are groups that had once been dominant and have either recently lost power, or they see themselves losing power demographically over time. They're the ones who feel this deep sense of loss, loss of status. They feel this deep sense of resentment. And importantly, they truly believe that the country is theirs, that the country should look like them, it should practice their religion, it should be based on their culture, because it's always been like that. Does it sound like any country you might know of, or more importantly, live in? And once again, we get the wrong idea from our own misunderstanding of history. You know, we think the Civil War began when a gang of treasonous young cadets from the Citadel, upon being ordered so to do by one Pierre Gustave Tuton Beauregard, yelling, "Far!" Started lobbing shells at the federal fort in Charleston Harbor. But in reality, it began a long time before. It's quite possible the first real battle of the Civil War was fought in the capital of the United States, when a southern member of Congress beat a northern member of Congress with his cane nearly unto death and over the issue of the abolition of slavery. We would do well to pay attention. But our own misunderstanding of history also has the blue lining up against the gray. I mean, that did happen. The first land battle of the Civil War was fought here within the territorial boundaries of what we now know as West Virginia, at a place called Philippi. That's neither here nor there. But it's it's worth noting that that's not where we are. That's not it. I don't think within our lifetimes we're going to see that. No, it's going to be more the asymmetrical stuff that tends to happen in civil wars that don't look like ours do, or like even some of the English civil wars. It's more like, it's more like that, the Balkan hellscape of, people running around in ski masks and fighting wars dressed in jeans and members-only jackets. It's chilling, and it's worrisome. But if we do want to make comparisons to the Civil War in the United States, it's worth noting that the Confederacy's Constitution most notably said that nobody ain't never going to challenge the idea of chattel slavery. But they were also, they also had an autocratic bent and a taste for things like censorship and the like. And so what that does is it takes us down to Tennistan, where, as we have seen before, maggots there have already evinced a taste for censorship. You might recall that a Moms for Liberty woman went into a school board meeting and threw a conniption over a children's book with little watercolor illustrations about seahorses, because it would confuse the children because of how seahorses make little seahorses and the male seahorse carrying the young. Oh Lord, it about drove her around the bend. But she was also upset about Ruby Brooks, her memoir, her autobiography about school segregation. And they were generally aggrieved by anything that made them perceive that they, felt bad. Well, that was then. This is now. And so we find ourselves going to McMinn County, Tennistan, where the school board there voted to ban a book from all of the schools in McMinn County. I don't even necessarily know that the book was in McMinn County, but the way that these things work is that it doesn't have to be a reality. I mean, look at the conniption they threw for years over partial birth abortion, which is a fantastical term and not an actual medical procedure. It's just good for getting the ignorante riled up. Or look at the trans sports bills. She's always got to bring up the trans. Why has she always got to bring up the trans? It ain't everything about her. No, bigger picture. The trans sports bills. There is not a crisis of secondary and post-secondary school athletics in this country that is brought on by wild-eyed hordes of hairy trans women just ruining things for the fairer sex. You might recall that when Make West Virginia, great big old Governor Jim Justice signed this state's idiotic trans athletics ban into law. He was actually interviewed, I think, by Stephanie Ruhle. In no way, shape, form, or fashion do we want our precious little West Virginia girls to have to compete against boys. But Governor, that's not happening in your state. I mean, do you have any examples? Well, no, I don't got no examples. Nah. Voter fraud. We gotta have voter ID to make it. And then they get busted in places like North Carolina where the court says, y'all just admitted you were doing this to keep black people from voting. So they, they don't even necessarily have to have the controversy to create it. And so in the McMinn County, Tennistan schools, it will no longer be possible for a child to check out a book called Maus, M-A-U-S, and it's all caps, M-A-U-S. It's a graphic novel. It's by Art Spiegelman. And the Tennessee Holler reported that that school board voted 10-0 to ban the book from all their schools. Again, Maus actually won the Pulitzer Prize because it is a graphic novel about the Holocaust. But there in God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, amosexual, Christian, McMinn County, Tennessee, they said, we cannot have this book in our schools because it contains words like God damn and naked pictures of women's. And the school board said, well, it hasn't got nothing to do with the Holocaust. It's them dirty words. Right. Book banners. Goes hand in hand with people who don't want democracy. You know, it's instructive. If you recall the programs that Dr. Bill O'Brien used to do, you might recall that he talked about early in the 19th century, it was a sure signpost that the Enlightenment was over. That there was a proposal in the Congress of the United States to ban the importation of books from Europe, lest the proles get some sort of uppity larning what they couldn't get there to home. Ban the book. Steve in New York says, question to the Horn community, family community congregation. Did those three words send chills up anyone else's spine? Well, it sure does me. It absolutely does me. And the thing is, in former times, it would have been possible to say, well, you know, this is just a spasm. But in the here and now, and it was bad enough. You know, I read the couple of weeks ago, I read the letters of note letter from Kurt Vonnegut to some jackass in the Midwest about banning Slaughterhouse 5. The subtitle of which, by the way, is The Children's Crusade. And without using any dirty words at all, he absolutely eviscerated that officious intermeddler. But that's not all that they're doing in Tennessee. Oh, no. There's a brand new bill what's been introduced in the Tennessee legislature, in the House there in Nash Vegas. HB 1769. They are calling it, they have nicknamed it Kyle's Law, and it has nothing to do with the huge, fluffy, furry, gray kitty cat that we have here, who is occasionally heard yowling on the program. No, the Kyle's Law is named after none other than young Meister Kyle Rittenhouse. And it falls directly in the line that proceeds from the rat out your neighbor bounty law in Texas and creates a private cause of action through the private cause of action that's been created or is being in the process of being created in Florida to allow people to rat out others who mention gender in the public schools. And that line runs through Virginia, where Glenn Youngkin, dulcet-voiced Glenn Youngkin, says the school boards just aren't listening to parents, and created a rat line. For people to call and turn in teachers who are teaching subversive, and that is to say, actual facts to children. And then in Tenistan, Kyle's Law, where the state would be required to reimburse costs to a criminal defendant who gets charged with murder or some other form of criminal homicide, but mounts a self-defense claim and then is found not guilty by a jury. And afterward, if the defendant was acquitted, they'd move for reimbursement following the not guilty verdict, and then the court would decide how much money to reimburse the defendant. This nightmare load of horseshit, is that our first dirty word of the evening? It was introduced by a Repiglican by the name of Bruce Griffey from Paris, Tenistan. And he was immediately interviewed by Fox 17 News. And he said, Kyle Rittenhouse had to defend himself not only against a first-degree murder charge over the course of a year-plus politically motivated prosecution and a two-week jury trial, but also against widespread defamation and false branding by corrupt media outlets simply for exercising his American God-given right to self-defense. Luckily, Kyle Rittenhouse was rightfully acquitted of all charges, but not after thousands of dollars were expended on attorney's fees for his legal defense, reputational damage was incurred, and emotional stress was suffered. Kyle Rittenhouse can never be fully made whole. That's lawyering language, by the way. For what he was forced to endure. But under the law, I'm proposing if someone in Tenistan is placed in the same situation as Kyle Rittenhouse in the future, he, she, they, does it include the non-binaries there representing Grifty or Griffey, can at least be financially compensated. My bill will help deter what happened to Kyle Rittenhouse from happening to someone in Tenistan and will help protect the right of Tennesseans to self-defense. Yeah, that's a big steaming pile. Of course, what we don't know, and, you know, the devil is always in the details. If Tenistan decides to, if this bill passes and gets signed into law, and I have no doubt that it will, then if the court makes an award to such a person, then the state of Tenistan can seek something, might want to, we don't know, might be able to seek what's called subrogation. And I bet you we've got people in the Horn Family Community Congregation who know real good what subrogation means. That would mean that the state of Tenistan could sue somebody for prosecuting the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian murderer. Uh-oh, looks like I've done got sideways with Brother Deacon Asa. A fucking 17-year-old asshole suffered damage to his reputation. His reputation? Oh, I know. It gets worse. The bill includes a proclamation. And proclamation, my goodness gracious, it's enough to make you think that maybe somebody wants to pay young Mr. Rittenhouse a visit. Whereas earlier in his teenage years, wait a minute, we got to do this right. here we go. Yeah. Whereas, earlier in his teenage years, Mr. Rittenhouse participated in the Grays Lake Lindenhurst Haynesville Public Safety Cadet Program run by local police departments, training aspiring police officers aged 14 to 21 in the basics of law enforcement, as long as they're not going to work for the Capitol Police. Whereas Kyle Rittenhouse deserves to be recognized as a hero who selflessly defended the Confederacy, community, protected businesses, and acted lawfully in the face of lawlessness. And whereas he is a symbol of things that the left is trying to destroy. Wait a minute, I'm going to shift gears here. I think this would sound better. And whereas he is a symbol of things that the left is trying to destroy, our Constitution and our Second Amendment gun rights, and provides a lot of hope that we can fight back against the enemies of our Confederacy, Constitution, and win. And whereas he stood up against the woke mainstream media who tried to villainize him and assassinate his character with unfounded false claims, and not only one, but expose their unapologetic lies. And whereas Kyle Rittenhouse is a survivor who was victimized by three convicted felons who chased him, assaulted him, tried to grab his gun, and caused him to fear for his life. He was then victimized by malicious prosecutors, Yankee prosecutor, oh, we better strike that Yankee part. He's a Yankee too, who unfairly and irresponsibly demonized and persecuted him for exercising his legal right of self-defense. He was further victimized by deceptive corporate media outlets, the Lugan Press, the Lion Press, strike that too. More interested in pushing a leftist agenda than reporting the facts and the truth. However, young Kyle stood strong as Stonewall Jackson at the first battle of Manassas. No, let's leave that out too. And won. Well, we can leave the one part in. At least somebody won something. Which is a testament to his integrity and strength of character. Wherefore, it is hereby declared. Oh my God. I wish this was some parody. No, we've made a parody of it, but it's deadly in earnest. And I guess the state of Tennessee is just flush with cash. What happens if the state of Tennessee is the one doing the defending anyway? What if he's got a public defender lawyer that the state's already paying for? Does he get a laurel and how hard a handshake? And the funny thing is, of course, Kyle Rittenhouse, because this is just a filthy pastiche of lies, Kyle Rittenhouse wasn't out any money for his own defense. Because he had well over $1 million that was raised for his legal defense by a group of, the same sort of people who committed arguable treason on January the 6th, 2021. Because he had him a whopping big GoFundMe we might be in worse trouble than we think we are. It's like the bounty in Florida. If you catch if you catch a teacher talking about how maybe little Johnny's two moms might, one of them have been a guy once upon a time. Well, you can sue that teacher and that school board. And I guess the school board's going to have to pay the judgment, which is a unit of the state of Florida. Do they think this stuff through at all, even a little bit? Uh-oh. Now I'm sideways with Now I'm sideways with Todd. Now you know daggum well what that sacred violin melody done to me. Kyle is the one what got Mr. Haney to cheat people more than normal so as to support his cause. And this is one of the things I love about this program, the things that we find out that we would never have known before. Our buddy Don in West Tennistan, a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation of longstanding, said, representing Griffey, is my state rep. Known him since he was a kid. What he does is preach to the choir. They love it down here. He's not running again because of running for circuit court judge. Oh, I wonder what justice will be like in Judge Grifty's courtroom, Don. Yeah, I bet they do. They eat it up with the spoon in one hand and their open fist in the other, don't they? Ooh, hey, we got us some freedom. Man, it just makes me want to march off to Chickamauga. Yeah, or not. Flavio says, I read Mouse when I lived in Madison. I got it when it came out at Pick-A-Book on State Street. That store sold comics and posters and foreign newspapers and magazines. I love that store. I recommend the book. It deals with a lot of heavy topics, not just the Shoah, but the author's mother's suicide and his relationship to his father and so on. It is a great graphic novel comic. Well, it's great enough to win the Pulitzer Prize. But they're not going to be reading it in no McMinn County, Tennessee skews. Because it says goddamn in it. And ain't no child in McMinn County, nor Tennistan, nor the whole new 90 states of America needs to read that filthy phrase. And naked pictures of girls. This here's a Christian nation, don't you know? And Ron adds, as I said yesterday, you don't even have to include black people to run afoul of these snowflake white folks. Given their druthers, these white folks are going to raise a generation of truly ignorant children living in a land of lollipops and cotton candy who will never have their tender feelings hurt. Yeah, I'm so old I can remember when that dead junkie, Rush Limbaugh, Here's a cigar box with $10,000 in it. Bring the cigar box back filled with street drugs. I got a little problem. I like the Oxys best and chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor. Blah, blah, blah. My friends, I have talent on loan from God. Yeah. No, I can remember when Rush would bloviate for hours on end. My friends, we are ruining the youth of this country. We are destroying them. We're making them think that everyone's a winner. Everyone is not a winner. You don't get a trophy just for showing up. And now you've got ostensibly liberal broadcasters, multimillionaire members of the for-profit media, who make jokes about participation trophies. I never saw a problem with participation trophies. A little something to remember your season in football or basketball or baseball or hockey or cheer or gymnastics or
No.
But of course, that was going to be the end of the end of the republic, according to Fat Dead Rush. Yeah, the supply chain problem, as I mentioned, with the eternal pineapples down there, has been completely cleared up. Yeah, as to Judge Grifty down there in West Tennistan, Don says it'll be okay in your courtroom, in his courtroom, as long as you know him. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah, his son-in-law will probably be the prosecutor and make mistakes and call him Dad in open court. Oh, come on, Dad. As always, Joe Vecchio says, there must be in-groups whom the law protects but does not bind, alongside out-groups whom the law binds but does not protect. They are in-group and the rest of us are out-group. I summarize it a little more simply. Some people are better than others. And the thing about that feeling of superiority is it makes them perfect suckers for any grifters that want to take advantage of it. Right. Well, you know, you can get downright Orwellian with that whole concept, Joe. All pigs are equal. Some pigs are more equal than other pigs. And Mike in Cascadia says, To Kill a Mockingbird, removed from required reading list for McKiltio schools. An upper-class suburb of Seattle just had their school board remove To Kill a Mockingbird from the ninth grade required reading list. McKiltio, which I am sure I'm just butchering, is the bedroom community for, among others, the adjacent Boeing Everett plant. A long way from Tennessee, but the same thing. And that, and look, it's not an accident that this is happening in places as far as, because it's an actual AstroTurf movement. That Moms for Liberty outfit in Williamson County, Tennessee, that's about as grassroots as the original playing surface of the Astrodome. And some parent complained that the N-word is in that book in excess of 50 times. And KIRO Nights host Jack Stein said it is now removed because it is too racially charged. On the other hand, I guess they're still a little bit more liberal in the Great Northwest because they removed it from the required reading list, but they didn't pull it from the library. And it was not lost on these two folks from KIRO Nights, one of them Billy Sunshine. Great name. Jack Stein said in conversation with Billy Sunshine, You and I both know this is wrong. It's parents out there. This is so bizarre. Let's take a state that you hate, Billy. In Florida, Ron DeSantis is telling teachers what they can and can't teach, right? And it's parents who are coming out and saying, we want our kids to actually learn history. So in that instance, should parents not be telling the state what their kids should and should not be learning? Those cats sound like they're might be kind of fun to listen to. Is it any good, Mike? I don't know. Okay. Not being a douche, just making sure we're right. Animal Farm correction: all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than other animals. Have I got it right now? Thanks, Joe. I'll have a look. I will have a look later. As to suing states, counselor at the bar, Steve in New York, says, these laws, of course, have nothing to do with anything but farring up the Emerys and Marvelines, raising money and scaring libraries and schools so much that they will completely censor everything not white and male. And it's not just Tennessee, not just the great Northwest, not just Washington State. No. Saw another one earlier. Mississippi Stan. Because, of course, Mississippi Stan. How could it not be? There is a an administrator in Mississippi. Where did this story go? I read the story, but I want to get the names right and all of that. There he is. Down in Mississippi Stan, Ridgeland, Mississippi Stan, as a matter of fact. The mayor down there is Gene McGee. And citing citizen complaints about a handful of books that were in the library there in Ridgeland, Mississippi Stan, Mayor Gene McGee said, "You ain't getting your $110,000 until you remove them damn homosexual materials books from the library." So you see what's happened here. Again, about this movement is about as grassroots as the original playing surface of the Astrodome. In other words, it is entirely artificial. And, It's a thing that's done in the ordinary course of business among these right wing authoritarians, fascists. They get a directive to go into their local libraries and search for titles, and then they come back and they report the titles that they have found. And then they begin a hue and cry that these books be removed. The director of the Mississippi Library System is Tanya Johnson. She's the executive director of the Madison County Library System there. And speaking to WAPT-TV, she said funding for this year was being withheld until we removed what he called homosexual material from the library, and that he would not release the funding until we removed the material because he, by God, was a Christian and he could not support that. Of course, he's no more a Christian than, I don't know, the Emperor Nero was. The story in Gazette Extra down Mississippi Way notes that the move is a part of a larger trend of conservatives across the country trying to limit the types of books that children are exposed to. And it notes the article that the Republican governors, McGovernor in South Carolina and Greg Asbot in Texas want the libraries to be culled of inappropriate materials in schools. Mayor Gene McGee said there is a minimum sexual connotations that are not appropriate for children when they enter the library. That's only appropriate for grown-ass Mississippi adults who are consenting, or at least his wife don't know when he goes a wandering around on porn hamster. And The thing is, the mayor does not have the authority to withhold the funds. And the Board of Aldermen had already appropriated the funds. It's all over the place. Okay, I guess we need some clarification. Stephen New York says, homosexual material? You mean like pastels? I don't know. We may need to check in with the Horns Den Mother on this one. What would some of that there homosexual material be? As previously noted, if they had a poster of the Sistine Ceiling, is that homosexual material? I mean, God's naked and so is Adam. I was about to say Adam was naked as the day he was born, but he wasn't born. Right? Yeah. And it just goes on and on and on. I've got an aggrieved Karen here. I found this op-ed in USA Today from an angry Karen. We've got a dispatch from the Horns Den Mother. Matt says, the homosexual materials, one of them is definitely gold lame. I was kind of thinking I had a hankering for a gold lame gown. Dang it. Oh, well, we'll never give up. Never surrender. This Virginia Karen and Gannett there that runs USA Today, they publish some sketchy shit from time to time. And there it was. Carrie, told you she was a Karen. Carrie Lucas, an opinion contributor. She's got five youngins. And she's all pissed off because the school board, in contravention of what the new God Emperor in Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, whose campaign was funded with money from about every hate group he could scrounge up, this here Karen, she's all pissed off, like I said, because she wants her parental voice to count. Because Glenn Youngkin done said that the school boards ain't listening to parental voices. Now, she comes from Fairfax County, Virginia. And for those of you who don't know, Fairfax County, Virginia is one of your wealthier counties out there. And she, of course, sounds like a Glenn Youngkin voter. And again, she's about as genuine as the original playing surface of the Astrodome. They're not listening to me! I want my children to go to school and not have to wear a mask. Children suffer when they have to wear a mask. They don't suffer as much as they do when they're laying on their bellies horizontally crucified with a garden hose down their throat. No. But, you know, there we are. And Karen there apparently thinks that she's entitled to be the only parent who gets listened to. Let's see if that'll make it pop. There it is. Yeah. I saw, and this was published today,
I sought to exercise my right as a parent under Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin's Executive Order 2 by opting my two elementary school children out of their school system's mask mandate on Tuesday. I was told that if my children were unwilling to put on a mask, they were not allowed into the school building. My school district, Fairfax County Public Schools, is suing to derail the provision that would give parents like me, the right to opt my children out of this requirement. On Monday, the board held a virtual town hall. I was allowed to submit questions through an online form, which were ignored. Instead, those watching mostly heard a presentation on mask efficacy, which is outdated information. The board explained how schools were experiencing a surge in Omicron cases while also boasting about how their mitigation efforts were tremendously effective and must continue. And by the way, screw them teachers and them maintenance personnel and them bus drivers and them administrators. Screw them! I want my children to not wear a mask and maybe get the Rona. Well, that left me to deal directly with my children's school, which I wish wasn't the case. I tremendously respect and like my children's elementary school leaders and teachers and recognize that the district has forced them to implement a policy that defies the governor's executive order and frustrates parents. To minimize the disruption, this Karen continues, and allow them to prepare a response, I emailed the school principal the night before. You know, because the school principal's just sitting there waiting. I wonder, well, it looks about 8:15, it's time for the old Karen Express to blow through my living room. Explaining I intended to bring my children to school without masks, and if the school would not provide them services, then I'd be there to take them home. Oh, my goodness sake, gracious sakes alive, Karen Lucas in Alexandria, Virginia. My goodness. Oh, she's already counting the money. She just knows she's going to win a big old lawsuit and get a big old bounty. I'm sure. Not that she really needs it, living in Alexandria. Well, when I arrived at the school, it was clear my note had been received. I had a very respectful exchange with an assistant principal. She was polite and kind to me and my children. Well, of course. Why would she be anything but? Took my letter and seemed sincerely sorry that it was her job to tell me that my kids could not enter the school that day. Yet, school board officials had clearly felt the need to prepare as if I, and oh, he must have read the letter after all, and any other parents who wanted to similarly make their opinions known or stand in support of me were a threat to the community. Only because you are, Karen! You dirty, unmasked, probably unvaxxed, mask-hole, spread-neck COVIDiot! Not only, oh, she was so put out. Not only did a security guard approach me before I even got to the school door, a Fairfax County press person, Lugan Presser, introduced herself to me. They were there to determine who was allowed on school grounds. A reporter and fellow Fairfax father, whose own children will be eligible to attend that school next year, was told he couldn't stand with me on the sidewalk of the school. No, you're trespassing. Comically, the security guard pulled his mask down to bark orders. He was barking, explaining that he pulled it down because he couldn't talk through his mask. And there, of course, USA Today publishes a picture of Karen Lucas with her little spawn. Smiling, just smiling, happy, shiny little white children, with a poster done up in pink and blue letters on a white cardboard poster board background. Let kids breathe, honey. Have your children been coming home all blue from not breathing? You know, in a civilized society, Carrie Lucas would get a visit from Child Protective Services asking her why she was trying to kill her children. Well, that's just one of the problems with face masks. You got to bark through them. Sadly, while I respect schools' desire to protect students and staff from COVID-19, they downplay, if not ignore entirely, the very real harms caused by masks, especially to young children. Here come the very real harms. Warning. Hockey puck. My 7-year-old son has yet to attend elementary school unmasked. He spent the first 6 months of kindergarten online, not getting the Rona. When finally allowed in school, he was masked and told to stay within a chalk-lined box at recess to maintain social distance from his peers. I told you the very real harms. During first grade, he has to wear a mask from the moment the bus picks him up until it delivers him home again 8 hours later. All of this for a virus that is overwhelmingly mild for young children. It only kills a few of them, and so far it ain't none of them been mine, so fuck the other ones. Schools must trust parents' judgment. Seems rather a broad statement, doesn't it? Yes. I mean, England recently tossed mask requirements altogether. Well, I did, yeah. And if you were the government in England, you'd toss them too, because you know when the prime minister of the country's smuggling suitcases of wine. And the European Union has long recommended against masking children 12 and younger. As schools in other countries, by the way, does the European Union have Omicron just solved? Can you move freely in the European Union? I mean, are they at R0 for transmission of the COVID-19? I'm just wondering. Just asking questions. That's abbreviated JAQ these days. There's an FAQ, frequently asked questions, and then there's JAQ, just asking questions. It's possible to keep them open even without universally mandated mask use. Fortunately, around the country, fewer school districts are forcing children to mask. Why is my school system so unwilling to reconsider this guidance in light of a very different strain of COVID? When are they going to give parents the ability to make important health decisions for their children? Oh, honey, Karen Lucas, I don't know if anybody should trust you to make important health decisions for your children. God knows, I hope none of them ever questions their gender. I'm guessing the Karen Lucas has probably not been vaccinated in her own right. Children have lost almost 2 years of normal childhood, not because of COVID-19, but because of our response to it. We shouldn't require them to sacrifice anymore. Carrie Lucas is mother of 5 children in Virginia Public Schools and a member of Independent Women's Network. Oh, there's the tell! The Independent Women's Network. That's a right-wing cesspit. Let's check out their little promo video, shall we? And by the way, guess who wrote her op-ed for her?
Stand by. Here we go again.
Independent Women's Network, Row 1, Seed 1 Alpha, Take 7. Mark.
Independent. What does that mean?
I have no idea.
To be free from the control of others. To be bold, self-reliant.
To think for yourself.
to say and do what you think is right.
I'm an independent woman.
What do you want to bet every one of these are hired actors?
I am an independent woman.
I am an independent woman.
That's who you'll find at the Independent Women's Network.
IWN is an online membership community by women, for women.
It's a safe place to connect with other like-minded women outside of big tech.
Emphasis on the word like-minded. If you are not a right-wing POS, you are not welcome at the Independent Women's Network. I'm pretty sure I'm not welcome. No. Truth seekers, freedom fighters, game changers, and policy makers who want a secure platform for honest conversations about everything from politics and culture to education and family. Karen Lucas is, she's doing her doggonest to make sure she raises good, compliant little Republicans. I know, remember that part where she said the EU has recommended against masks for children under 12? Stephen New York, research department, says, I know this will shock you, but she's lying. As this states, that's not true. Many countries require them in all primary schools. schools must trust parents' judgment. Wow, this Karen's really something, Christopher in Oregon says. I'm guessing she's pleased as punch how Sandy Hook School trusted the wise judgment of Adam Lanza's mother. I'd give you a cowbell, but that's just too dark. That's true. And, of course, is Gannett and USA Today going to run an op-ed from somebody maybe not quite as pale as Karen Lucas, who says, I would like very much for my children not to catch the Rona and die. And unless your children are wearing masks, their chance of that goes up by a factor that is probably measurable. No, that's a silly question. Parental choice. Steve asked, you know, what if parents want their kids to be able to find Mouse in these many other books they're banning? Well, they are not the parents' voices that Republicans want people to hear. You only deserve to be heard if you are towing the party line. And the party line is ban them books! And get rid of them masks. We're going to get us some herd immunity. And you know what? If they get sick, we'll just rub a little ivermectin on their feet. I wish this was all satire. It is not all satire. Oh, by the way, white supremacist adjacent barely became governor of the state of Florida only with the help of real live, no kidding, Nazis, Rona death sentence. Well, he said that now that he's gonna have the state of Florida sue the Food and Drug Administration because the Food and Drug Administration recently revoked the emergency use authorization for drugs that don't do anything to stop the coronavirus. You might be curious to know that he's probably deeply invested, according to some published reports, in the companies that make those drugs. The Associated Press said, the Republican governor's comments come a day after the U.S. Food and Drug Administration moved to revoke emergency authorization for the antibody drugs from Regeneron and Eli Lilly. The drugs, which were purchased by the federal government and administered to millions of Americans, had become a centerpiece of death sentences' coronavirus response as he resisted vaccine mandates and other safety measures. But by God, he wants to give them some drugs that won't do a damn thing for him. Nope. Hey, I got the word right. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. It's Mukilteo. Yay. One for the good girls. Of course, Rona death sentence did not initially elaborate on how he plans to oppose the decision from the FDA. Yeah, we're going to let the parents sue him. We'll give them each $10,000. Yeah, this is who they are. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said, when they asked her about his fucking pronouns, her about his position, she said, "Let's just take a step back here. They're still advocating for treatments that don't work." And now we live in a time where, I think most of us have heard, and we say it facetiously. Oh, what? You turned your ankle? Rub a little dirt on it. Walk it off. And we've gone from that to rub a little ivermectin on it. Drink some pee. Eat some dirt. We call it Thorn in the Side Thursday for a reason, you know. Ron and Raleigh says, "Missed it by this much." The richest county in America is Loudoun County, Virginia. Fairfax County is number two. This shows you where all that military, congressional, industrial complex money's going. Oh, Lord, yes. And apparently, they got a nasty outbreak of maggotism. And, of course, does our side... I'm just curious. Just asking questions, JAQ. Does our side have an independent women's network or independent women's forum group to organize? Is that code pink? I don't think so. Do we have an organization out there that can astroturf up a response to Karen Carrie Lucas? It's a bit of a... Well, that's probably why there won't be a response in USA Today. I would be really happy if there was, but right now I'm betting no. Jeremy in Vermont said, "Independent network. Dear Lord, that sounds like an AstroTurf organization if I've ever heard one." Oh, of course it is. Liberty Council. Sit, Liberty, sit. Randy Radar says, "The anti-vaxxers will happily gobble up a McDonald's hamburger, and who the hell knows what's in that, but they won't take the vaccine." Well, like I said, I've stood in the blue lot at Mountaineer Field and watched someone I know open up a 1.75 of Jim Beam, throw the cap away out amongst the gathered faithful. "We're not going to need that anymore." Take a swig and pass it, and it never comes back. Or what's more, quart jar of moonshine, and you really don't know what's in that. "Well, I don't want to get the shot. You know, it ain't been researched enough." "Well, what about your moonshine?" "Well, my grandpappy's been, great-grandpappy was making moonshine." Well, we knew all you need is a radiator to a 1931 Ford coupe, and you use that for your worm, and if it burns blue, it's good. Mm-hmm. Lee in New York says, "Oh, for the first snake oil treatments. Have they given up on drinking bleach?" No, well, they were doing that in December in Dallas. You know, they were waiting for the return of JFK as soon as he got done masquerading as Prince and playing it. I know. Hey, let's go. Before I induce a full-on conniption, let's check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
You know what? You really... most times I don't get into the... Yeah, see, you're laughing. All right, I got something for you. Now, look, that sounds terrible. I hate when I do it. But what you have done, you've taken Jesus's thorn of crown, put it in a pillowcase, a very thin pillowcase, with some rocks, slung it around your head, and waited for me to raise my arms up and just whack right in the ribs. That's what you just did.
Stings a little, don't it?
It hurts. Now, I'm going to start, and I'm not really going. I'm not going to keep it because we're
Sunny Muffin.
I mean, Let's start recent and then work back. And you're talking about the lead poisoning with the moonshine. My God, that's the truth.
Lead? That's the good stuff. Oh, is that a little lighter flavor for lighter fluid for flavor? Maybe a little iodine makes it taste like scotch.
They start experimenting. That was a good bet. What'd you do? I took my sock off.
Put a little Ronsonol in it.
Oh shit! You know it will be.
You
nice
know, you food. Know, I ain't lying.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. And it's dicey because some of that shit is smooth, but is it antifreeze? Is it glycol?
That's yeah, if it's sweet, glycol. if it's sweet, it's antifreeze.
Oh boy. But moonshine's a big deal. People get in fights over how pure their moonshine. I mean, it causes trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I know a couple of people who are very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this stuff comes off about 130 proof, and I won't touch it because it's real easy to drink. And the next
it's
thing,
too smooth.
Yeah, and when it's good, and the next thing you know. Next thing you know, you're in a brawl with a maple tree out in the yard. God damn it! Why are you looking at me?
With your barking face.
I mean, it ain't like stump liquor.
No, but that's the thing. That's,
now, one fella I know will take one, and I mean one, only one, a not crushed spearmint leaf. And put it in the bottom of the bottle before he fills it up, and just leaves it with that one lonely little leaf. And you would be amazed what that does.
Just one.
Tiny. And then there's the fella I know that made his out of raisins. Woo, you could fuel one of Elon Musk's rockets with that stuff. But it was smooth.
Man, that's a whole program, man. Because honestly, that's what gets you coming back when you have a hookup with the great good stuff. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where you know people that drink it and they don't get sick. And they're not, you know,
well, see, and there was a fad a few years back. You remember, oh... What was that series? It was so popular. And it was
the
about
moonshiner?
No, it was about a lawman in Kentucky. Somebody will tell me. But there was a whole subplot about this old lady that made illicit moonshine, and she called it apple pie. And the next thing you know, all over the place here, and I mean this was years and years ago now, but all over the place, hey, I made some apple pie moonshine. Stuff was sweet and syrupy and
people who never had any good moons, I mean real, like the real deal, like,
well,
real,
yeah, and girls and women just loved it. Yeah, you know, funny, I can't taste the alcohol.
You're not, that's the whole point. That means it's pure alcohol. But, you know, you had to put something in it to give it, you know, so everybody has a role with it, put it, you know.
Justified. That was the name of the series. Justified.
Oh, Justified. Okay. Well, I had to get that off my chest because while I was on hold, then you brought up the moonshine. I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember that. But between the book banning and... why is it white people are so averse to accepting the fact that white supremacy and white privilege are real entities? They are real behavior.
Well, you know, I had a thought, Todd, when I when Mike in Cascadia sent that story along about removing To Kill a Mockingbird from the required reading list because it has, you know, that word more than 50 times, and it does, and it's a problematic book. I'm not going to lie. But the problems that arise from it is from the white savior theme.
Exactly.
And people who you know voice some concerns about it tend to do it from that aspect. But I'm wondering I'm wondering if the parental complaints came from the, and you know, you gotta put the scare quotes, the black community. Something in me desperately wants to believe it did not. I don't know. Maybe I read it in ninth grade.
It was required reading of people from our generation.
Did you read it when you were young?
Of course, I had to. I read that. I had to read it in middle school. I think it was fifth or sixth grade. Yeah.
What did you? I mean, tell me. I mean, we just happened to stumble onto this topic. What did you think?
Well, I thought it was complicated because there was a lot of nuance. You know, you have this push and pull between what is right, what is wrong. You have this young girl who, you know, she's told all, you know, what is right and wrong in life, and she sees these things, and she expresses it to her father. And then it makes him think about, what the hell am I doing? So a lot of it is about life. It's really, that's why you have to read it a few times, like maybe three times, maybe. I don't know. That's for me, because I'm, you know, I'm just.
Well, I remember reading it, and I've read it a number of times. And I always thought that, you know, the black people are about the only decent people in the book besides the children.
Yeah. But then at the end is what messes you up. It's the reflections.
Yeah.
And that's what makes you read it again and see, well, you know, the nuance. You know, it's just, see, it brings in a whole lot. Southern culture, American culture, you know, of course, race, that's omnipresent. That's what it's about. But, you know,
let me ask this. Would it stand as the same book if you expurgated that word?
No. We've already fought this debate. A lot of municipalities and school districts have already been through this. The reason that word is there is, I'm going to tell you, that's why, like in my exhibits, I use color when it's, you know, when it's appropriate for the time. You have to use the language that people were using at the time.
Right. But, you know, Atticus doesn't use it. And the kids don't.
Well,
use it. The word appears because it is put in the mouths of the villains of the book. It's kind of along the same lines, and you know, I am certainly open to being corrected on this. But you know, in Shakespeare, I'm trying to think which play it was, but you know, it was once a thing to see people walking around with T-shirts with a line from Shakespeare in it. On it.
Yeah.
And that line was, the first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers. And it's like, ha, 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 you know what? That's what we need here in America. We need to kill all the lawyers. Until you take enough time to try to explain that Shakespeare specifically puts that line in the mouth of a treasonous villain. Who knows that if you want to exercise complete power and control, you've got to get rid of the people who know how to object to you know, going against norms. And so, you know, that word, you know, and the word count is horrifying, but he puts it in the mouth of people who are, or she puts it in the mouth of people who are villains. Bob Yule uses it.
Well, that's because that's who they are.
Right. And there he was, rutting on my Mayella.
It's just being authentic. That's what it's being. It's authentic.
And every now and then there will be an upheaval over the use of the word in Huckleberry Finn. And
he's much more judicious, about
how... Well, I mean, Twain was making a point. You know, because Huckleberry Finn, more or less an orphan, had nobody but Jim. And, you know, that caused a huge, huge uproar when it came out. You know,
here's a little white trash boy being raised by his black men.
Yeah. Going down the Mississippi River on a raft.
And that made, I swear to God, that made me want to get on. I did it. We all did that shit. You know you wanted to do it.
Did you get in a raft and go down to Schuylkill?
I went down to Perkiomen because I was living out north. I was living in that area then. That's when I was in the suburbs where I could do that. And that's exactly what we did. And we had a mixed crowd. Our friends were, we had a mixed crowd. Yep. But that's what we did, man. I don't get it for that. I'm surprised I'm alive. That's all I can say. It's just crazy. But I'm not the only one. A lot of people did that. You did it, didn't you?
Hush. Of course I did it. Only it was Cypress Creek. And that whole creek was slithering with cottonmouths.
Oh, shit.
And we turned over the canoe.
Oh, that's not good.
Oh.
Did you get bitten?
No. Never been so scared in my life. Because a cottonmouth is mean. Rattlesnake try to get away from you. That's what that rattle's for. Get the fuck away from me. I don't want to do this. Cottonmouth will drop in your boat just to watch you shit. Now, supposedly, we don't have them here. We got copperheads and rattlesnakes.
You have copperheads?
Oh, hell yes, we got copperheads. You wear thick boots when you wear thick boots when you go blackberry and raspberry picking.
That's bad news bears.
And then old story time, long time ago, Ferg was a little boy and I was going to take him on a hike. And he was so eager and so excited. He's always been a talkative fella. Imagine that. And I kept going, son, if you'll just be quiet, nature will fill in around you and you'll hear amazing things. Really, Dad? And the conversation continued. And so as we came back toward the car, I can still see it as if it happened only minutes ago. We were on the trail coming back to the car, where we'd parked the car. And he's still just looking around, talking, not paying attention to what's in front of him. And Mr. or Ms. Cottonmouth is laying right across the path. And looks up and is like, what the fuck? It looks at us, and I grabbed him by the back of his overalls, and I threw him about 15 feet in the air. All I heard was, Dad! And he gets up, he looks at me, he's mad. And then all of a sudden he sees that copperhead's tail slither off into the grass. Like, I kept telling you got to pay attention out here. Oh, by the way, there's been some cowbells passed out, courtesy of Billable Rick. Cowbell nomination for Chris in Portland, or in Oregon. Robin, since when does someone only get a cowbell for happy thoughts and clever sayings? We all can't be fake giraffes after all. Sorry, Giraffe and Junior. Can't a cowbell get awarded for profundity, even if it's dark? Yeah, that was the Adam Lanza's mama comment. Cowbell for me, after drinking moonshine, the next thing you know, you're outside having a brawl with a maple tree. Okay, I'll take it. Thank you. Thank you, Billable. So, yeah, I mean, it's complicated, but writers who are artists know what they're doing, and I don't think in either instance it was gratuitous. But on the other hand, what I loved was, not loved, but the explanation with Mouse. Well, it had nothing to do with the fact that it got the Holocaust in it. I'm sure we can find some other Holocaust books for the little children to read. But in McMahon County, Tennessee, we are not going to have any books got no goddamn in it in our school libraries. Flavio, on the other hand, it pointed out a few minutes ago, Todd, he said, why not just ban the Bible then? It's got incest, murder, human sacrifice, mass slaughter, all kinds of human depravity in it. See how long they'll carry on with this stupidity.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to talk about that.
If you're going to ban Mouse and To Kill a Mockingbird, then we're banning the Bible. What's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. You ever had goose? Goose sucks. Never mind. Different. Yeah.
Well, honestly, as far as fowl goes, I mean, don't go out of your way. I mean, if you want something exotic, eat the peking duck. You know, it's not that bad.
No, I like duck. But
yeah, you know,
goose was, you know. Of course, we were having a spit shot out at the same time, and use that 10-gauge shotgun. And there's a lot of six shot in there.
That's what I was about to say. That's kind of big, man. 10-gauge, damn! You look like you had any goose left.
Well, no, I mean you got it. You know, you can't use lead shot anymore, and I'm not complaining. But you know, they're up there in the air. You can't just blaze away when they're chilling on the pond.
Otherwise, you'd just use a
222 with a scope and get your Lee Harvey Oswald on. I'm gonna dance with a murder hornet in hell for that one.
But wait a minute, see, if there's people out in this community who have never fired a shotgun, they don't understand, like, maybe what a shotgun can do. Like, and so if you ever get a chance, take a 12-gauge and look for an old door, and, I don't know, stand about 4 feet away, and let the door have it, then you'll see what a shotgun can do.
Yeah, and maybe do it, you know, with your knees locked.
You're mean.
And your arm's real stiff.
You're mean.
And don't bother to put that pad on your shoulder or anything. Shoot it like a badass, like you're Bruce Willis or something.
Man, you're trying to break people's bones and shit. You're fucking... So what Rob is saying is that there's just a slight bit of recoil. And it will be a huge hole in the door.
Yeah.
So when you hear about people getting shot with a shotgun, that's like, you didn't like that person. Yeah.
Oh, it still blows my mind that you can use a rifle during turkey season in this state.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Never mind calling the Tom in, you know. making them hand calls. No. You just get you a 222 with a 14 power scope on it and play Assassin's Creed with the turkey.
That's what it is.
He'll never even feel it. Wham!
Bam!
Thing is, if you miss, there ain't nothing but a big cloud of feathers. No, they say that you can buy firearms here that have a 222 on top and a 12 gauge on the bottom.
No.
So you got your choice then. Just winged them with the first one.
That's a redneck wedding present.
Down into the right.
I'm going to get him.
I already went there, so, you know, might as well.
Shut the fuck up. I'm sorry, it's funny though. That's hilarious. Oh God. Oh. Okay. Oh,
sorry, I'm trying to recapture the magic from last night, but I don't think I'm going to get anywhere near to what Scott did.
Oh yeah, you guys. Well, that's why you got so much feedback. You know, I was interested. But you know, one more thing about you know, the book about the trial with the lawyer and the mockingbird. You know. It's interesting, too, because it's written, you know, there's a woman who wrote it.
Right.
So that's the other little twist to that.
Best friends with Truman Capote.
You know, but I'm going to say what got me really triggered is this Kyle Rittenhouse thing and this whole savior mentality around him.
Well, I mean, that gets introduced in Tennistan. You know, down in the Alabama legislature, there's some maggot member of the legislature going, God damn it, how did we miss that? God, yeah. Top me up, William, Kyle Rittenhouse bills right now. Maybe we can't file it. We can't get it filed first, but maybe we can get it passed first. Can't be getting beat by Tennessee. Tennessee don't beat Alabama.
You know, it's funny, but it's true. That's why it's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, what about the judge, though? What the fuck is wrong with him? See, he fucked it. See, judges, when you start delineating what they can do, you know, how the trial can progress, this fucker was just so empathetic. He almost said, well, I know you just made a mistake, and I just wish you could. But it started with the police. The dude knew he did something wrong. Kyle Rittenhouse knew he had committed a crime. That's why he held his hands up, and he was waiting to be arrested. And he's walking by him, and he didn't do nothing.
Yeah.
See, it's, so...
Remember, Rittenhouse was pointing his gun at people when people tried to take the gun away from him and paid with their lives. And let's remember, he was not defending freedom. Nobody there called him in. Nobody said they wanted him. He wanted to cosplay SWAT officer.
Well, that's what he said in court. That's what he said in court. So that now that's the official story because court.
Yeah.
Is that they you see, so once again, we go back to, you know, they're there to protect white women and property. Anything else, yeah, so what? So how you go, you know, you come from out of state, illegal gun, you're underage. It's like the whole thing. Can you imagine somebody black doing that shit?
No.
Once again, white privilege, this was not just the whole point of my call. When black people talk about white privilege, we're not hating white people. We're just saying, look, you motherfuckers need to back the fuck up, for real. There's a reason why we're marching on the street and a little bit angry. You know, it's not like we want to do all the illegal shit that you people do, but we want to be held to a fair account. And that's impossible.
Level playing field.
Yeah, something. Yeah, I heard
it. But I mean, see, I have never seen, and this is not to say that I, you know, I'm not like News Ninja Gene who gets up and reads the whole internet every day. But I've never seen an op-ed in any newspaper. You know, I got to think it would be kind of a big deal because it is rare to the point of non-existence. I've never seen an angry black mom writing an editorial about how her children's childhood is being stolen from them because they have to wear a mask to keep from getting a deadly disease. Now, I have seen op-eds and the like saying, you know, gosh, it would be nice if you'd quit mistaking my 8-year-old son for a 33-year-old the parolee from the local maximum security facility. It'd be nice if y'all'd quit killing black kids. That I've seen, but I've never seen an op-ed from somebody, you know, it was late at night and I was writing an email to the principal of my school saying, I'm coming to school and I'm bringing my kids without masks. Y'all better get ready. Oh, and by the way, when I rolled that video from the Independent Women's Forum, they did make sure that they had a black woman actor who was saying, "I'm an independent woman." I'm like, "Yeah, you're a real member."
Well, you know, you struck on two important things that are related, and this is verified by empiricism. In medicine, medical professionals somehow assume that black folks don't have the same type of pain level as other folks.
Yeah, different pain receptors. So, you know,
right. You know, because we're primitive. You know, we don't hurt like, you know, other people do. And then we're adultified. When we see a black child, oh no, that's a scary black man.
Tamir Rice.
Right. Now, but see, this is all, you know what? All this goes back to Vesey and Nat Turner. I mean, it goes back probably further, but you see, what the fuck are they scared of? You don't see groups of black people just going out wherever white people live and robbing and raping and killing. In fact, it's just the opposite. Case in point, Kyle motherfucking Rittenhouse. Fuck him. That nigga ain't gonna live too long. I'm just telling you right now. He ain't gonna make it. People just lying. They just lying around. They waiting on his ass. I'm telling you.
You really think so? Because I don't think our side's that way.
These people ain't on our side. These people don't give a fuck.
No, but I'm talking he's a hero. He's a hero to the right wing authoritarian fascist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the goddess of irony, the goddess of irony thing, would be if the kid's out there walking around waving an AR-15 and some cop was to accidentally blow him away and go, "Holy shit, I have not." Can you imagine? Holy shit, I fucked up. I just killed Kyle Rittenhouse. Oh my God, my life ain't worth a damn. This blue life don't matter no more.
Well,
you think that you think they'd run him up the river? If a cop was to accidentally shoot Kyle Rittenhouse, you think, was to shoot Kyle? And I'm not fantasizing about it. I'm not saying I want it to happen. I don't.
Me either. I'm not saying it either. I'm just saying.
But that cop's blue life would not matter anymore because Tucker Carlson would be shrieking from the rooftops. I mean, then there's another one that just blows my mind. I mean,
don't bring him up.
I'm so old. I can remember protesting.
How old are you?
I'm so old. I can remember. I was this many years old when we protested the war against the innocent people of Iraq. You know, that's one of the things, and the for-profit media is just referred to as, the Iraq War. No, goddammit, it is the war we started of choice against the innocent people of Iraq. And I remember protesting it. And I remember howling about what a disaster it was going to be, and turns out it was a disaster.
They didn't listen.
But, you know, we cannot... Remember what Kinda Sleazy Rice, goes great with Kinda Sleazy Chicken, said? We cannot risk the smoking gun being a mushroom cloud. Wasn't that her? But nobody was saying, "Hoo-wee, we need to align with Saddam Hussein." Nobody on the so-called left, what left, was saying we need to support Saddam Hussein.
But he didn't have anything to do with it, and we knew. I mean,
the point is, you got Tucker Carlson out there saying, "Call your legislator, call your member of Congress, tell them to speak up and speak out for the Russians." I mean, it's so bad. It is so bad. I got a story in the stack somewhere.
Before you get to that, can I say one more thing?
Oh, sure.
I think a lot of people know about this fact. When we went to Iraq, their national banks got robbed in addition to artifacts, you know, like historical things. But somebody on our side stole a whole bunch of money and gold and jewels and booty. A whole lot of shit disappeared.
Yeah.
So I just had to put that in there.
Oh, no. There was a looting. You know, remember, we sent a bunch of troops to guard the oil ministry, and never mind the Ministry of Antiquities. But Julia Davis over at the Daily Beast checked in with what Russian journalists are saying. And she cited a writer at RT, you know, same place where RFK Jr. used to take the check. And, of course, Jill fucking Stein. She said that one writer over at RT said, "The sole anti-war voice on primetime cable in America happens to belong to a man whom liberals believe is a white supremacist. This naturally limits his influence with broader public." Ekaterina Kotrikadze. Ooh, I got all the way through that. Yay me. She's a host at an independent independent Russian television channel, Dozhd, said, "Tucker Carlson is one of brightest personalities of American conservative television channel Fox News. Sometimes it seems that he attends advanced training courses at the Russian Foreign Ministry." That's a Russian saying that about Tucker Carlson.
That is monumental. Did you just say what I thought you said?
Here, I'll say it. You want me to say it without the stupid accent?
That's some deep doo-doo, man. Please repeat that. That's serious. Come on, please.
Tucker Carlson is one of brightest personalities of American conservative television channel Fox News. Sometimes it seems that he attends advanced training courses at Russian Foreign Ministry.
Okay. Well,
can you imagine? Can you imagine? One, you know, it's along the lines of the question you asked a moment ago. Can you imagine if, I don't know, Malloy or Hartman had been on air in 2002 saying, you know what? We need to be on Iraq's side in this. I hope they kick the shit out of us. Jesus Christ! They would have had to go into the witness protection program.
They would have been renditioned.
Yeah. Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx says, "Tucker Carlson, America's version of William Joyce, a.k.a. Lord Haw-Haw. The British hanged him for treason, you know."
Yeah, you know, I saw his Russophile comment the other day. He can't possibly believe all that shit he says.
Well, no, he only does it because the check clears, I think, because he wasn't a full-on Grand Cyclops back when. But then again, CNN was cutting the check back in the day, so maybe he couldn't be his authentic self.
Well, but on the other hand, let's dissect this. He does have the Nordic last name, Carlson. That's Norwegian or Finland.
Oh, my God, somebody's giving him a new name, though. Oh, this is brilliant.
What?
Cowbell for Julia Davis. Tucky O. Rose.
That's brilliant.
And so now on Russian state TV, they'll give the official party line, and then they'll play a clip of Tucky O. Rose to back it up.
Okay. I'm going to piggyback. I'm going to add on to what you're saying here. Because, all right, let's just put these pieces together. I'm divorcing myself in an attempt to divorce myself of emotions about this and just look at the facts. All right. It appears that we've been softened up by the Russians, you know, to make them more palatable to middle America.
You know, well, I seem to recall that the first impeachment had something to do with Ukraine.
It certainly did. And see, people don't still get that right.
And Nitwit Nero trying to shake down Ukraine. You know,
nice little country you've got there. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. You know, I'm friends with Vlad Putin.
Well, and remember, most Americans, or a lot of, obviously from what I hear, a lot of Americans don't understand there was a reason Biden said, well, if you don't do what we want, you're not going to get the money, because all
well, the do what we want, the do what we want part was a unified statement from more countries than just the U.S., and the do what we want part was get rid of the wholly corrupt, utterly dirty government official.
Right.
Everybody knew he was dirty.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Well, except for the maggots. No, but you have a better voice. I mean, come on. That's it. And it's not getting through, or they don't understand, or they don't want. They don't want to understand because it doesn't compartmental. You know,
because we already know if we send you a bunch of money, he's going to steal it.
Everybody wanted him gone. The whole Western world wanted him gone. Yushchenko, I think his name is. But maybe it's not. But we can understand the concept here. That particular individual that we're talking about, right? He was just corrupt to the bone, you know. He was like Putin's crony. And he was like, no, we're not dealing with you. You know, go away. So this softening up, we see that. You know, then there's the RT, we see that. Then there's this drumbeat not drumbeat, that's the wrong term. Then there's this meme where, oh, they helped us in World War II, and why are you hate on them so much? And they're just no. I mean, you know, do you think Reagan spent billions? He put us in debt to keep those motherfuckers off our back. The person you love, the person that you would fucking ask. Excuse me, no offense. I mean, you know what I mean. Like, come on. Your father figure, Ronald Reagan, he put this country in debt to keep the U.S., to break down the USSR. And, you know, he did a bunch of other shit. We're not going to get into right now because that'd be off point. But, I don't know. Am I going off base here?
No, not at all. Not at all.
So,
I don't think so.
Okay. Because that's what happened. We outspent them, you know. And, you know, maybe that was one way to do it. Or do something. But, you see, this whole nonsense. And now you got people. Oh, this is what I was leading to. Now, there's an individual. And I don't know how many Jewish folks we have in the family. Like people who have roots in Eastern Europe. But, you know, when you grow up in the Northeast, you know, especially in the city, you know, that's just no, I mean, come on. There's no Jews around here. They're the ones that are around here, they hide. They don't want to be Jews. I'm like, I know you're Jewish. But anyway, you know, there's this reporter, quote unquote, early on the scene, that had a very interesting spelling of his last name, Boris Epstein. Now, very few people spell their name like that, with a Y. You see, that just doesn't happen. That's some straight Russia shit. That is some straight Russia shit. Remember, and he was aligning himself with all these right-wing people, saying crazy shit. And then he just like disappeared for a little while. And now he's back. He's on these talk shows again. And I haven't forgotten. And I hope one of these, seven-figure journalists picks up on this. Because he's another mole. See, this is the thing. They got all these moles. We've got people in Congress now. I don't know. What do they have on these people?
I earnestly don't know. But, you know, for years we've said that all those rubles coming from Mother Russia into the coffers of the NRA, who then distributed them lovingly throughout the Republican Party, he must have had some sort of an impact. Because Russia does not give away rubles out of a sense of simple charity. And just to go back to the Reagan business for a second, because you kind of opened that door, let's remember something. The Soviet Union was a teetering, osteoporotic skeleton.
Creaky bones and cracks.
Yeah, oh yeah. Held together with spit and toilet paper, chewing gum wrappers, and baling wire. And we knew it. And so at about the time that Reagan's coming into office, they've done the analysis and they know the Soviet Union is going to collapse. And they said, the Soviet Union's going to collapse. Because there were things to worry about, like, you know, vast stockpiles of nuclear weapons and the like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the cynicism of Republican politics, because somebody whispered in old 666 Ronald Wilson Reagan's hairy old ear. And he said,
well, Mommy, what we need to do is make it look like we did it.
And so what is the myth that's grown up? Ronald Reagan won the Cold War.
They keep building it up.
And there we are. And Randy Radar answering the question, they've got the RNC's emails. And they do. But that one went down the memory hole.
But they got us on both sides. Exactly.
They got the DNC's emails and used them. They got the RNC's emails and held them as compromise. This isn't that complicated.
They're corner board. They're just some fucking corrupt corner board.
Yeah.
I like the way you laid that out. That was very, understandable. Yeah. And I think the defense industry had something to do with that, too, because at that point, you know, Reagan wasn't himself, and Nancy was really one of the things. Because, you know, and people suggesting, well, you want to take care of your friend, you know. I don't know how they said, but, you know, that is just more money, all these defense contractors. And that leads me into Loudoun. And, you know, I've been to Loudoun countless times because I had relatives out there until they moved. And, you know, what's interesting about Loudoun, Virginia, Loudoun County, it was very rural. Like, it's still kind of rural, right? But, you know, they have a lot of East Indians out there now. But it didn't start out that way. But, you know, it is really up. I mean, you talk about upscale. I mean, you've got these farms, and you have these big-ass, just ridiculously big houses, right? And when you go to D.C. from Loudoun, you know, you can go the poor way or you can go the wealthy way on the highways, on the freeway.
Oh, I thought you meant use your private helicopter.
Well, you can do that, too. But they've got that toll every like, 13 feet. You know, you're paying a toll. You know, you get past Chantilly, you keep going, you know.
I drove the poor side of that road one day.
And it takes forever. Boy, you got to have a lunch. You got to pack a lunch.
We left D.C. at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we got to Richmond at about 9.
See? and you're watching, you can see the motherfuckers like they got this, the easy pass, and it's just zoom, 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 and you got to stop at the light. And there's a light there.
Oh, yeah, that toll road part looks like fucking Tron with the motorcycles.
With the lights on the back.
Yeah.
So you saw what I saw. I was like, damn. And so, you know, and this is family people. And he says to me, you know what else they have out there? Like, when you go toward D.C., they got server farms out there. You know, because it's all defense contractor money.
Oh, yeah.
And he was telling me, you should invest in that. And I was like, well, I'll think about it. So I think he's already done that. So I might, you know, I ain't like I got no money, but, I, you know, this whole thing. Oh, Robin. The Kyle Rittenhouse thing is what made me call. It's so disgusting.
Yeah, it is.
Do you think so? See, you know, you look at January 6th. That's white privilege. You think some Negroes gonna be up there like challenging? We can't. Fighting with police? When was the last time you saw a black motherfucker fight with police and not get killed?
At least come out with a couple of broken bones.
And yeah, they're just strolling through the fucking Capitol.
No, they were not just strolling. They stopped and took a dump.
Oh, I forgot about the smearing feces on the walls. Yeah, well.
And the floor, and they carried, you know. Joe Biden was right. Something that did not even happen during the Civil War. They carried that filthy devil's diaper.
Yeah.
Through the Capitol of the United States of America. That actual patriots died defending.
All right.
I mean, I have walked the Manassas battlefield. Didn't mean to walk the whole thing, but we did.
If there's nothing left, that point which you made right there, I mean, I've said it before, we've said it, but I think maybe if we can find a lunch, our lunch needs to use that and just, you know, be like Goebbels, man. Drive it in and say, you know, it's symbolic. They put the Confederate flag in the Capitol. And then let people talk and just say the thing. They put the Confederate flag in the Capitol.
Yeah.
Because apparently it's not sinking the fuck in.
Well, it's not sinking in because they don't want to consider it, and it's not being hammered, so there's that. Meanwhile, I guess there's a little bit of good news. Stuart Rhodes, the guy who spent $22,000 on weapons and ammunition and had a contingent ready on the Virginia side of the Potomac to cross the Potomac in boats and attack the Capitol, allegedly. He's staying in jail pending trial, at least, because it's a miracle. A federal magistrate judge in Texas, happened today, released a 17-page order, and it denied Rhodes' request for bail so that he could live with a third-party custodian. And the magistrate wrote, and this is Judge Kimberly C. Priest Johnson, Magistrate Kimberly C. Priest Johnson. The evidence shows defendant orchestrated a large-scale attack on the federal government with the purpose of intimidating by violence federal officials and disrupting official governmental proceedings incident to the transfer of power in the executive branch following a national election. Defendant's authoritative role in the conspiracy, access to substantial weaponry, and ability to finance any future insurrection, combined with his continued advocacy for violence against the federal government, gives rise to a credible threat that defendant's release might endanger others by fostering the planning and execution of additional violent events. In other words, Magistrate Judge Kimberly C. Priest Johnson said, y'all, he's gonna do it again. But here's the... if there's any... his estranged wife, Rhodes' estranged wife, Tasha Adams, says she's afraid for her life and that of their six children if he gets out.
Oh, they don't look good.
Because he was not unused to walking around the house waving a gun. Freedom!
Are you surprised?
No, and it was to control her behavior. and said he would said he would beat the shit out of their children and call it martial arts practice. Now remember, this dumb violent bastard, shot his own eye out.
That's what I was going to ask you.
No kid, you can't have the Glock. You'll shoot your eye out, and he did. But the most compelling part of her testimony was when she explained to the court that he lived in fear of being picked up by the feds and had installed elaborate escape tunnels in the couple's backyard, hid unregistered cars in the woods, purchased hundreds of dollars of razor wire that he wanted to install around the perimeter of the property, concealed from view, in case the feds ever came to his door. This is what generations of right-wing broadcasting have wrought.
Wait a minute. That shows intent. Like, you knew you were doing something wrong. That's intent.
Right.
I'm no attorney, but it seems to me that's intent.
So apparently he's going to continue to cool his heels. And this dude graduated from Yale Law School. But that's a magistrate judge's opinion, and I presume it can be appealed to the district court. And God only knows which federal district judge, probably some maggot, that she serves under. And, you know, he may get out yet.
Well, see, all this stuff is going to come right up to you-know-who. And then they're going to say, well, we can't do anything. But everybody around him, they're going to get locked up. I mean, the people like that. That's And I hope, you know, it would be nice when he's incarcerated, like right now, if he could get a decent barber to trim his beard up. I don't know what the fuck that shit's about. But,
it's a little bitch.
You know, what the hell is that little whiskey shit doing? That's that one-eye shit. See, you can't do your own haircut when you got one eye. It just doesn't work right. But, yeah, he's fucked up. Yeah, he is real fucked up. I saw some statements he made, man. These people, man. I don't. But they're not slowing down. There's a lot of them, but you know, there's a lot of people behind them, and they just, you know, this is the country they want.
Yeah.
This is what they want. And I don't know what to say. Tell your white friends and neighbors that when black people talk about white supremacy and white privilege, we're not hating white people. We just want you to recognize what you possess, what you do.
Yeah, it's nothing personal.
You don't have any knowledge of it. Personal.
No, it's not personal. Jude gave me a cowbell. Your impersonation of Reagan deserves the bell. That was perfection of tone, Robin Deere. Hello, you two. Yeah, thank you, Jude. Thank you.
Hi, Jude.
And I gotta add, I don't know if you were listening last night. Yeah, you were. But have you found a way to watch Night Talk on Georgia local cable TV yet? Because for a connoisseur of fine maggotry on Washington Journal, I gotta think that you're gonna turn into a Night Talk fan real easy.
I googled it. And I can see where it's like some old timey CCTV, you know, closed circuit television.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, it looks like comedy gold.
Yeah, no, that's as far as I got with that. It's out there. I did Google it, and so it's out there. You have to dig through a bunch of stuff because Google does, you know. But yeah, so that's as far as I got with that. So, you know, I've taken up enough time this week with you, I think, of the family time. But this Kyle Rittenhouse thing, this is a real issue. We have judges who are sympathetic to this nonsense. You know, and people, young people. See, and I heard you make that comment. Right, we got a whole new crop of young people who are going to think it's okay. And they don't even know they're privileged. Like, oh, I can just do what I want. You know, but
I know. Oh, by the way, Arnold in PA says, I love the stupid accent. Keep it up. We'll certainly try to keep it up when opportunity presents. Ron and Raleigh asked, are we channeling Pavel Chekhov? Absolutely, because he is the only one who pronounces Russian V like wobble you.
yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's old cousin Ekaterina Kincaid.
Man, look, that dangle. I'm sorry Scott didn't laugh last night. Scott, you need to, I don't know what's going on. You need more coffee or something. Because that shit was funny. That shit was fucking hilarious, man.
I thought it was quality.
Well, I'm just saying. Well, next time we talk, maybe I'll have some movie stuff to talk about. We'll see what happens.
That'll be cool. I keep hearing about Free Guy. Ryan Reynolds. God, I mean, last weekend was special. Annette and I just sat there and hee-hawed watching the Hitman's Bodyguard and the Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. Lord God, that was funny.
See, I get what channel is it? I mean, what platform?
Well, the Hitman's Bodyguard is on Prime.
Okay.
The Hitman's Bodyguard's or the Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard is on HBO Max.
I won't be seeing that. I won't say that.
But you want to watch them in order. I mean, so watch The Hitman's Bodyguard on Prime. Because
Prime is kicking the llama's ass.
It is kicking the llama's ass.
That's a cock.
Yes, it is. It kicks the llama's ass. Never did understand this that.
This is what I don't get. All the money that the Apple had, their shit wasn't near as good as fucking WAN. You can have fucking 8 instances open. You can mix if you're having a party. I'm like, man, you people got to get with the program.
Yeah.
How many people do you think use that? Seriously.
It came back. Gone for a while, but it came back.
It came back because people begged for it.
Yeah, you mean because it worked?
It was too good. Remember, it used to have I don't know if it still had the video, but it had, man, look. I just don't understand. You just right-click, add the bookmarks. Boom, boom, boom. It's just too damn, it's sturdy, it's durable. You can change how the face looks. But the thing about having multiple instances open, when you're having a party, man, you can seamlessly mix the music. It's just, you're right in. You can have it, I just don't understand it.
Well, you know, you can't make any money if you don't screw up your thing, your software every so often. And God knows iTunes has just been, I'm sorry, it just is. It's an exercise in screwing up the screw-ups.
They should have just stopped and said, wait a minute, we're not doing this right. We dug this hole. We need to just get out of the hole, recalibrate, and start over. That shit was corny.
Still doesn't work worth a damn.
See, they make great. I mean, their product is great. Why can't you make some decent software for just? I mean, it's just. Ugh.
I mean, I don't use it around the house.
I don't.
I mean, I use like if I'm out on the road, I'll say, hey, you know who, play. And lately, I've been just absolutely earwormed with the Panal remix of Elton John and Dua Lipa of Cold Heart. And I played it for Annette, and she's like, oh, I love this. So every time we're in the car, we wind up listening to it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous mashup. Hey, by the way, going back to those independent women, Matt in San Francisco said... If they're independent, why do they need a group to support them? I'm confused. Join the club. Independent Women, Ron and Raleigh said, you know who would have one of the mouthpieces for this outfit on his show very often. Not lately, thank goodness. And, you know, like I said, Arnold said, let me find it here. Arnold said,
man, Arnold has it hard, you know, because I'm going to tell you, once you get in the internet,
you know who is in the pocket. He said, you know who is in the pocket of the Russians, too. Arnold says, please say the following. In Russia, car drives you. Okay. I did it, Arnold. I did it. Christopher in Oregon says, Captain Crunchy Maggot, not only was the captain afraid of the feds, he was deathly afraid of the crocodile who swallowed the clock, too. Let's figure out who this secret parrot is. Hey, kid, you'll shoot your eye out. Ron tells me there's going to be some sort of a sequel to Christmas Story coming. I don't know how I feel about that. You know, sometimes you just want to leave alone. Oh, by the way, we are 2 hours and 24 minutes into the program. We got $1,358 to go to finish fundraising for the month of January. That's just today, tomorrow, and Monday all together, $1,358. And this evening, this here Thorn in the Side Thursday has been a goose egg. And it's really bad timing for a goose egg. But
yeah, that's my fault.
No, it's not your fault. That's not your fault. Not at all. Let's get Jude into the conversation if you can stick around for a second. Hey, Jude.
Oh, yeah.
Jude? Hey, hi.
Hey, hi.
Hey, Todd. Hey, Robin.
Hey.
I wanted to...
Wait a minute. Let me do it, because you were the inspiration for this the other night. Salve, Puella. Salve!
See, when we talked about that, you know, a couple months back, about the only word I remembered was Puella, I didn't even know how to put that, hey, girl, hey, you know, out to Tracy right now, because I just knew Puella. But, you know, Todd, it brought up that piece about your... Latin teacher. And I had reflected on that. I'm outside because I started having all my limbic system just started firing. And so I have to kind of get some air. But when you brought up about him and how you, you know, we didn't get into it, but how you had that sense he was a serial killer and not maybe that he was, but that kind of strange thing that goes on with people. And then you had mentioned, and I asked you, when was the last time you thought about that? And you said, well, you know, I dream about that. And we didn't go on. And I don't know why I brought that up.
I'll tell you why. Since you're asking, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Mr. Hand, which was, it's a beautiful movie. It encompasses everything. But so he makes the house visit. I guess everybody's seen this movie, but Mr. Right. Okay. So he came up in the dorm. This dude came up in the dorm, and we were, I was down the hall. Right. I was down the hall in the hangout room, at a certain time of day before lunch, where we would try to enhance our appetites. And
why? Whatever do you mean?
Whatever you mean. Right. And somebody said something, and we opened the door and looked at it. And said, Todd, he's knocking on your door. I said, oh, shit, that motherfucker. I couldn't believe it. I mean, he had this dead-eye look, and he had stubble on his head. Like, it was always about a quarter inch of stubble on his head. And, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, the part that...
I just had to get it off my chest.
No, I think it was kind of an important piece. But when you brought up about still having dreams, that kind of, because that's another part of one's reality, how we process when we're the most vulnerable, when we're asleep. And that just, is kept coming back to me for some reason.
Because
and then
haunting.
I wanted to...
This dude is haunting.
Yes, yeah. And what to do with that? You know, your dreams belong to you. I mean, our dreams are ours. And when people start invading those, it just from my perspective, you know, it's time to look at something and, you know, have some kind of protection. And because your life is so valuable. I mean, you know, Robin, I mean, so many people on the horn are, you know, so valuable. We only can, you know, we work every day, take care of things, come home, we turn you on. It's not a casual kind of thing, because often it's really, you know, distressing to have to hear, but Todd, what you did for me on Monday, I had gone through an enormous trauma over the weekend that completely destabilized me. And I hadn't been listening to anything at all through the weekend and just kind of, you know, tried to get myself grounded and back again. And I went to work on Monday. My beloved work, where the energy flows, higher consciousness resides, I found myself having to avoid just about everybody. And it must have been so obvious. Well, it turned out that it was obvious, because I knew that if I'd looked at anybody in cage, because they're all so kind to me, that I would start sobbing. Well, you know, I mean, they got, it's a huge warehouse. They're expanding. They have things to do. They're disciplined. You know, I didn't want to bring something, and I didn't know how to do it. But I listened to part of Robin's show on Monday, and you made a statement about, you know, I don't take this from an ego standpoint at all, but you made reference that I have faith in you. And that gave me a lifeline to be able to kind of come out of where I had been, because I was scared to death. Gave me a lifeline. And then all through the week, there have been so many other incredible people. There's two young fellows that come up to my housekeeping door if they see me in the warehouse, and they usually aren't together. And they say, Jude, how are things going? And I said, well, I'm just, you know, I'm kind of traveling through something. They've done that every single day. And today was the first time that I shared with them the specifics. I didn't get into the whole thing. I mean, how remarkable in our lives to have people care for us. You know, like you caring, you know, you guys, you both caring for me. Yeah. So it was more of a, I just knew if I call in and be led to what I was supposed to share with both of you, that would help free me even more because of the energy, because there is an energy exchange. And not just beneficial for myself, but hopefully, you know, for all of us that are in difficult places with all of this going on, you know, we're in a huge quagmire. And since you made that statement to me and the different people coming up, I've been able to kind of expand and have the awareness of what is the higher good out of this whole situation? Where can I, in just my small way, take this that was, you know, I mean, it was like we almost had police and, you know, I don't walk that place. I've seen it. You know, I've been present on the periphery, but to have it so intimately exposed. Thank you very much. Just thank you very much.
Wow. I had no idea, but I will say this. You are the balm for the family, and we're all family.
Yes, she is. She is. She is. She is a guru, spiritual guide, channeler of soul energy.
I especially love the balm. Because we all need balm in our lives and, you know, with people. And I have so much more of a sense of being grounded. And, you know, I was kind of, when I was doing my meditation, it's usually very still and quiet. But at the end of it, I began speaking out into the universe and, you know, wanting to know the direction, you know, always seeking the right, the higher road direction. And I was given this awareness, it just came to me, it just said, look for the higher good, look for the higher good. And then a visual of taking, what you guys were talking earlier about Tom Sawyer and going down on the raft. And when I would visit my Aunt Charlotte and Uncle Dan on Lake Washington, I had my own little raft that I made out of inner tubes and such. And it wasn't necessarily connected to Tom Sawyer. And it was on a lake. I didn't travel. I had to, you know, paddle. But those are such rich parts of how we connect on, you know, such an interesting, out of literature, on such interesting different planes with each other. And I'm just very grateful. And I don't want to be redundant, but I want to thank you for the time. And even though I sound kind of shaky because I, you know, I don't want to, I mean, I just have so much moving through me because so much of me is being cleansed as I'm speaking with the two of you. And that is very powerful. And for that, you know, I just kind of bow my head and say thank you.
Just Robin.
I'm absolutely just blown away. Jude, it's, words fail, but the earnestness with which you live your life and the essential goodness always shines, and that's a big part of what makes you so incredibly special.
Well, like I've said before, it happens because we're engaging. When we're isolated and alone and just trying to journey through things, it gets real complicated. But to have, you know, I talk often about vulnerability and the importance of being authentic to that, even when, you know, it's hard to do. And but that's what I've found in the form of the horn. And I have very few people that I email with that, you know, I mean, I'll give a shout out to Kevin. Kevin has helped me through so many, Kevin in Colorado, so many instances of times that I needed that kind of different perspective on things. And that's got its own wonderful, rich life. And so it's, you know, it is a distant community, you know, people that are removed from each other. But our connection, not just in the tones of our voices, but, you know, the way in which we try to live our lives and that, you know, collective earnesty of, you know, really wanting things to be much better. You know, we can't ever minimalize that. That is huge. That is huge. But it's been put in the group. Yes?
No, I don't want to cut. I didn't mean to cut you off. Please finish your thought, because I've talked enough, but I just wanted to.
No.
You are so similar to my better half, who is not. See, you know, we're geographically away, but she is very similar to you in that she's very sensitive, and she has some kind of way to say no without saying no all the time. Like something would be totally messed up, and she'll find a way to say, "Well, maybe you want to do this, maybe you want to do that," and she runs a studio where they do yoga and meditation and stuff like that. And she feeds the homeless. And she just, like, she gives people chances that no one else will reach out to. In other words, I guess she has an open heart.
Yeah.
You know.
Precious.
And
Precious.
It's just, yeah, we need to, you know, she's not like you. You're different. You have, see, it's the thing. You possess a power that maybe you don't know you possess. Maybe that's why people were looking and taking care of you at work, because you definitely have, even just audibly, you have a presence. That's why we always get quiet. You know, you always say, "Are you guys listening?" It's like we get quiet because you mostly don't speak unless you have something very important or very, you know, just something different.
Well, I can be your sister.
Would that be okay? That'd be okay. But, oh, my God. See, this is what, you know, you said it, though. You described what this, well, you know, everyone who enjoys and engages in this program. Like, we all come from different places. Not all, but we come from different places, some of us. But this affords us an opportunity to be real. That's the thing. Like, I curse a lot because that's kind of who I am. Like, you know, I like to curse. I'll be frank. Mm-hmm. I can't do it at work. But, you know, but I feel like I don't, you know, I don't have a problem with it. But, you know, obviously society says you're not supposed to do that, but I don't care about that. You know, I do what I want to do. But you, when you speak, Robin, am I wrong here?
No. Roll with it.
See, Jude, that's what I'm saying. And you felt the spirit, whatever that is. See, I mean, we all believe in energy. Obviously, we're all connected.
Thank heavens.
Thank heavens. Mm-hmm. And, at the end of the day, you know, we're all here together. And there are leaders, and you're a leader. You may not know it, but you are a leader.
Well, it reminds me when we were talking about mentors and, you know, I don't know, a few conversations ago, and you know, that I was, and again, I'm being redundant. And then I brought up that I am like mentored to by so many people. And it was so critical today for me to be able to talk with you. I thought that was so interesting that you called in again, because, I knew that I had to make a shift. My boss, I went upstairs, young gal, she's a skier and does yoga and all this stuff. And, I had to tell her about a dispenser that wasn't working that I had tried to fix. And she goes, "Are you okay?" And I said, you know, the usual thing is, yeah, I'm fine. Well, how do you do that in a work situation? How do you, you know, it was at that moment, but I had been working towards that moment because I had dealt with, you know, a certain group of people that I knew that I could trust, that were so compassionate and being concerned about not bringing any kind of negativity in or bringing burden into a workplace, you know, to put onto other people that's not theirs. I mean, it's been fucking amazing to journey through it. And it'll just be a week ago tomorrow since this. So when she asked me about it, I looked at her and I said, well, you know, because I was raised, you never talk about anything. You don't even talk to the relatives about anything. And yet I always felt loved. But we never had any discussions about anything other than maybe over holiday dinners. So the evolution of me coming through, you know, trying to, you know, follow whatever this breath that moves me along, you know, brought me to that point with her. And I said, well, I thought I'll use the word trauma. And then I couldn't use the word trauma. I had to use the word domestic violence, which, you know, pains me to say that because it's, you know, you put that out on the air to people you don't know, you know, just trying to be careful, but also, you know, may it help someone else maybe that's listening to understand that there's ways that we can move through things that not only lift us up, but also provide opportunities for other people to nurture. And she shares this whole great big thing about her mother. She remembered her mother being beaten up and down the stairs. And that was nothing of anything of what, you know, I journeyed through at all. And, you know, people get concerned about safety. Everything is taken care of. I don't take those boots out lightly anywhere. And nor do I live my life, even with something like this happening on, do I take that lightly. But it was a remarkable time. And, you know, for that, you know, that bears its own kind of fruit somewhere down the, you know, oh my God, we had a killing two houses down the street here a couple of weeks ago. So we have a lot of police if you hear silence. A young gal was stabbed to death, and You guys are silent again.
No, honey, we are listening again.
Okay, listening again.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm sitting right next to you. I'm standing next to you in front of your house or in your backyard or wherever you are near, wherever you live.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for stating that. Because I'll draw upon that when that's needed and vice versa. Thank you. That's very powerful. Just like I knew, even though my limbic system was like off the charts when Robin came in and asked who I was, because I thought I was going to have to say, the two of you are going to have to talk until I get myself more grounded. But it had its own kind of flow. So it's always trying to seek the higher good in the midst of all the insanity, you know, all of the insanity, and having each other to trust, you know, and to be real about things that we'd rather not, you know, have to talk about. That's because the micro is so vast, but our micro, if one can't hold on and be able to journey through the micro level of our lives without it becoming so disoriented, that's when we will lose everything. Because the macro will always remain there, complicated, convoluted, you know, war-mongering. But our lives are pretty, you know, pretty precious and worthy to have. I don't feel worthy, but knowing you gives me a sense of worthiness, and that's important. So there.
Yeah. Right? So there. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so there.
I'm floored, and I just, I'm honored, floored. You know, you. Well,
right back at you, for having the vessel and the willingness.
You know what? That's a beautiful thing, and I like what you said about macro and micro, and right, we can't change maybe the bigger stuff that goes on, but we can focus on making life better for everyone where we have control. You know, like when you go to work, you try to, you know, do the best you can. And even though everybody deals with weird people, crazy people, whatever, even if they're not weird and crazy, maybe, you know, it's just treat people well. That's all I'm saying. Treat people well. Karma, is nothing but physics. Treat people well. Everyone's not having a good day every day. And we have to be sensitive to that fact. Mm-hmm. Right? You know what? And let me say this real quick, because I'll never forget when this happened. At one point, I was in an office. When I say office, a room in a larger organization, a huge room. We all had a corner, and there was a large conference table in the middle. And I say large, I mean this room was probably 30 feet by 30, you know, 30 feet square.
Yeah.
So we all had our desk in the corners. And I'm in there with three women. So the first thing I had to, and I went from my own office to that, you know, with some restructuring. So the first thing, one of the alpha ladies was like, look, when I come to work, I'm going to talk to my friends. So you're going to hear me chatter. Like, okay, well, you don't tell me, whatever. So, you know, it was different. But apparently, you know, I'm very emotional. And when I come in and if I had a bad night, they could feel it, and I didn't know it. And they had an intervention with me at one morning. And they said, hey, you know, you need to, you know, we appreciate it if you would, you know, kind of, you know, if you don't have a good night, don't bring it to work. I'll never forget that. And these are three women, you know, sitting me down, and they weren't confronting me, and I didn't look at it like that. But they were saying, you know, just remember there are other people around you. And, you know, that's where compartmentalization comes in. And it's difficult for a lot of people, for most people. It's a skill, you know, to be yourself and compartmentalize. But, you know, we all have to remember that we're around other people.
Tread lightly. Mm-hmm. Well, when you heard that, could you go back to a specific instance that you remember bringing some heaviness in? Or were they misinterpreting your sense of sensitivity and being how that travels with you and not really having a specific? Does that make sense to you?
It does. It does. You know, I'm a very emotional person. And at that point, I had a few friends, you know. And I had, you know, friends that we just play and friends that I was serious about. And when the serious friend, when we were on the outs, you know, I would bring it to work. And then the other friends would come to work. And they'd come into my office, you know, because I was working at a university. And then I have, you know, women come in the office.
And how old were you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, in my mid-30s.
Mm.
Yeah, some of these ladies were very young. You know, they were, you know, whatever. I don't know if that matters. But, I mean, they would seek me out. I wouldn't even be looking for them. They would seek me out.
Let me share something with you real quick. A note from Shorty in L.A. Hey, Sister Jude, our universe, as you know and have felt, always releases creative energy. Crapola, you did it again. See, Jude, how'd you know I'm typing about the universe? No one knew. Creative energy creates, recreates, and all that is living on planet Earth, we're given the gift to procreate. Todd just mentioned energy. What a great synchronicity. The horn knows I have to voice type. My point, I was voice typing this long before the topic came up. I just wanted to tell Jude that those two people were sent by our universe. That's all.
How
do you like that?
How beautiful, Short. That, yeah.
And we had it.
That meant a lot.
And we had a bit of a miracle. Eugene just jumped in. Gino, thank you, Gino. And did I have a show on me? So the end January, the end January total just dropped to 1058, and Earther just took us down to 1048. So we got what remains of this evening, and then tomorrow and Monday, maybe we can finish January to the good. Maybe.
It always happens, wow. Robin. It always happens. Wow, that's wow. Oh, see, you've always helped me. All of you always help me to prepare for a better day tomorrow. So. This is good.
I'm glad.
And there's so many others.
I'm so glad.
Hey, can I ask you a halfway personal question? Well, maybe it's a full personal question, Jude. I hope your son is doing well. I hope he is.
My son? The one that had the addiction?
Yes.
No, that was one of my daughters. No, not at all. Not
daughter.
And that reared its head up, you know, this weekend also. Yeah.
Okay.
No, just well, you had mentioned when I had brought that up one time that treatment, you know, with people that have, you know, cocaine addictions, that rehab doesn't necessarily work, you know, the first time, but. Yeah, it's a confluence of, you know, when it makes me think about, and Robin has helped me throughout the years, you know, thinking of women standing, you know, someone going and standing with, you know, boots or flowers or whatever, how, you know, how ridiculous or, which for a period of time, you know, people would try to put upon the movement. But it's not at all anything light. And I've been able to, with my daughter, I probably should stop because I'm probably be revealing too much of.
Don't make yourself uncomfortable.
Well, I just don't. Sometimes I don't know where the I don't know what's going to come out of me, so I have to. I just have to reach that place of being able to trust and know that. You know where the substance comes from. It doesn't come from me. It comes from wherever that. You know, Mike brought up on his program a couple nights ago about this telescope that's going back and looking at the beginning. I think about that concept. I mean, that was kind of mind-boggling. To go back in time.
Yeah, but I mean, that's how the whole speed of light thing works.
Oh my God. And see, we have the excellence of those
pictures of the nebulas, like you know, how when they started coming out with the pictures from Hubble, and now it's going to get better. You know, it looks like light. It oozes with life. You know what? When you see these nebula, you know what I'm talking about.
Well, out of the one of those is called the Pillars of Creation. Have you viewed that one?
I have.
If not, please.
But the funny thing about the photos we get from deep space is that those images and the structures that they show to us, they can be millions, billions of light years across, whatever, and at the same time look at something you could see under a microscope.
Yeah, I mean the breadth of it.
Let me ask you this question. Oh my God, because I'm old. No, I remember this like yesterday. There was a show called Mork and Mindy, right?
Oh,
and
yes.
In one episode, okay, they introduced Mork introduced who was the alien. He introduced this concept of like, well, you know, like what we consider Earth, we could be a thread on a pair of Levi jeans somewhere. God knows where.
Oh, I'm convinced of it. One of the problems I have with organized religion is that it is so earth-centric. It is so egotistical. And long ago, Jude and I had a conversation about a passage from Dr. Carl Sagan called The Pale Blue Dot. And if that does not humble you and give you a sense of where you are. Nothing will. But secondarily, the way I always put it is like, you know, we are one atom in one drop, because I'm a little bit more coarse. We're one atom in one drop of armpit sweat on one hair in the underarm of a great big humongous creature, and we think we're running the show.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I was really trying to get it down to the because we are, you know, and yet at the same time, so many grave responsibilities fall upon our shoulders, because the mathematicians and the astrophysicists can say, "Oh, you know, it's almost impossible that we're not that we're the only living thing out here," and that's true as far as it goes. But we are living on the only planet that we know of that supports advanced life. And I'm not necessarily talking about the humans. I'm more likely talking about the octopuses. Okay?
Don't be messing with my cephalopods.
Yeah, the cephalopods are damn smarts, what they are. Out, punk a shark and make him say thank you? Really?
Have you seen them open a jar? I ain't fucking with...
Oh. I've seen them walk across sand on dry land. Oh, and the most, and I think Annette is still mad about it. we watched that documentary from a couple of years ago, My Octopus Teacher. And at the end of it, Annette was like, I hate him. No spoilers. But as this is the only planet we know supports advanced life, it's almost as though some portion of our societies and cultures are like the rotten little kid in the first Toy Story movie who just wants to make a shitstorm wreck of all his toys. You remember the toys, you know, the Barbie doll head with the monster machine body and the spider like erector set body. Remember that? And he was just a mean little kid.
Yeah, the mean little kid did that. And the Barbie at first was sweet when she was witty. I mean, she was concerned
This is a different Barbie. Oh. This is one of the kids' Barbies. And that's a perfect or near perfect analogy for what's going on here. And of course, that brings up a reference to Don't Look Up. And no spoilers, but
I finally watched it.
Even the brilliant young graduate student scientist who knows we're about to be wiped out by a comet is sitting on a couch in the White House pondering one question. Why would he charge for snacks?
A general.
Yeah. Why would he charge for snacks?
How does Don't Look Up differ from Deep Impact, which was seen by the other day by a certain person?
Don't Look Up is just the darkest of dark humor. I mean, this is gallows humor.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
This is whistling past the grave funny. So, you know, why would he charge for snacks?
Who was the iconic figure that, the man that ended up supposed to be not necessarily a philosopher, but he didn't turn out to be a very kind soul. He was kind of nebulous in his existence. He was like so much intellectual. You know that scene where he has the children with him and he does some kind of announcement, and when it's over, the children try to make a statement and he, you know, disclaims them and puts them aside. What was that? Who is that supposed to be?
I'm trying to remember who the philosopher was, and I want to be so careful that we don't put any spoilers out there.
Well, maybe that's how I just interpret it, because it, you know, there was kind of a psychology aspect of it.
Oh, like, he was the head of, the head of the department that keeps an eye out for crap that's about to hit Earth?
I think so, and it was kind of a small, whimsical kind of character that.
Oh no! I know who you're. No. That was the composite character for Elon Musk, and he was motivated by nothing but avarice.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I couldn't figure him out.
He was the villain of the piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, you got to get going because it's like 5 o'clock.
It's 8 o'clock here. Well, see, that's what happens. We get going, and the time flies by, and then boom.
How glorious! How absolutely glorious! Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're both the best.
I don't know about you, Todd, but I feel lifted up.
Absolutely. How could I not? How could you not?
Right back at you, Todd, Robin, Shorty, and the other fellow that wrote in. That was wow. Okay, all right. Well, let's just keep on keeping on. Okay.
Let's do indeed, Jude. You have a good evening. Be of peace in your spirit. I know you will be. And thank you. Todd, you gotta watch Washington Journal in the morning.
Oh yeah.
You know, you and Steve are in charge of taking that one for the team.
Those are your mea culpas, Todd.
Yeah, I'll manage my filthy morning habit. And by the way, I don't know if you noticed this, Todd. They made Mika move on set. She's in Poland, you know. And they've
they
got her
move on set.
Yeah, and they have her sitting in front of a background of the old town in Warsaw.
Right, it looked like Germantown a little bit. Right.
Yeah, it's very Central European. And in the middle of it, there's this big-ass tall Christmas tree on, you know, the 26th of January. And even if you're talking about really, really esoteric, like Eastern Orthodox or something, which the Poles are Catholic, there's still no reason to have a Christmas tree up. And so Joe, because he's an asshole, started giving her hell about, you know, oh, see, they're keeping the Christmas tree up.
He's one of those, Jack. Those people. I'm so glad you and you. Please stay on.
Bear with us for a minute here.
We have to
be shallow for a second.
No, this is not shallow. This is serious. This is a big debate within this community, and I think it's everywhere. Let me tell you, my tree is still up. You know why? It gives me joy.
Yeah,
it is a beauty, and I've been when I drive around. Man, this is a very conservative place where I live.
I love it. I hate it. I love the Christmas lights and stuff. I hate it when the lights go out because then it's just dark and cold and awful.
See, yeah. I'm gonna tell you something. With all the stuff going on, people, a lot of decent people, you know, people of good minds and good spirits are keeping their Christmas stuff up because it's happy. And it makes you feel, and it's like, why not? There's no law against it. Then you got these ultra right. That shows you what he's about. He's his ultra right wing conservatives. They get it. Now, you know, like, nope, it's it. You got to put the tree up. You got to put, you got to get the kids in school. I'm like, but there's a pandemic. Nope, they got to go to school. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the way I was taught, and it's contrary to the Advent calendar and everything, it's supposed to, I guess, come down on Epiphany, but being a hillbilly girl, I was always taught that if you take, it's bad luck to take it down before New Year's Day or after New Year's Day. So apparently, in Appalachia at least, you're only allowed to take your Christmas tree down with a bone crushing hangover from New Year's Eve.
Right, like you had to rush and strip it down, like what? That's extra stress. That's extra stress.
Because it was a static background. She wasn't sitting in front of a live shot of the old town, because today they had live shots of Warsaw, and it was just grim and gray, and the rain was pouring. And
so that's what he preferred. Okay.
But they had moved her in her chair so that she was sitting in front of the Christmas tree so nobody would see the Christmas tree. I mean, I'm weird, and I notice these things. I can't help it.
But you saw the Christmas tree.
It should have been off to her left or right. It should have been off to her left or right, if that's the case.
Well, it had been. It was visible, but it made it clear that it was not a real shot. And that is what he was being a smartass about. Because he, you know,
well, that's,
he does. Go ahead, Jude.
Well, I mean, that's not very kind. That's his wife.
Don't watch the show, do you?
No, I don't. Not.
Oh, no. Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
I mean,
that's
well, thank you.
Well, I have
Warden, Warden June Cleaver, they're not.
You don't watch the show, do you? Damn, man!
Well, I'm not, you know, when I wake up, I go into my meditation and...
I mean, every time I see those together in the same studio, for some reason, and the background MP3 player in my old DJ brain starts playing, the thrill is gone. The thrill is gone away.
Hey, listen, Todd, you know.
Careful, it takes up jogging.
Oh, good. Hey, Todd, I have to. One of the things I so enjoy about you is your laugh. I love your laugh because it just like comes down from your base chakra. And I remember you and Robin were engaging over yoga pants one time. and then I came on.
I love yoga pants now.
Yeah, it was so.
Lume, you better not need that. You better watch out.
As soon as I can afford it, I'm going to buy me some.
Dude, I'm sorry.
I just hate the thought of all them little animated critters down there.
No, that's. No. I think it was more that, you know.
Have you seen that commercial, Jude?
Jude is too enlightened to pay attention to that kind of stuff. Quit it, Todd.
I have seen that commercial, but it was like part of me. It was like, what is this? You know what? My attention was diverted to something else, and it wasn't until Todd got into the specifics of things, and the whole thing was it just was very sweet. You know, just very sweet. Because I came back. You know, because you were, I don't know if you were feeling bad or embarrassed or whatever, but I could come back and say, that's how come it makes you who you are. You know, just all the subtle nuances that we have. And so it's good. I mean, it's good. Even when it's crazy, it's good.
It's like pizza. When it's good, it's great. When it's bad, it's still pretty good.
You know what, Jude? You should talk
to Todd. Don't make me pull this radio show over.
Pull it over.
I will.
Oh, I'm popping sweat. Oh, Jesus. That's too much. Oh, God. Oh, you people.
Oh Jesus. I get you peopled at the end of the program.
You know, I just said that because I knew you would have a response. That's why I said that. Because I know
I live to be you people.
Jude, you know you people, right?
Oh, and by the way, I have to everything that Arnold types, I have to say tonight, and maybe in perpetuity for the time, in my bad Russian accent. Arnold said, I took down Christmas lights today. It makes Arnold happy when I do my cheesy Russian accent, you know. Old cousin.
You're very good.
Old cousin Ekaterina Kincaid with a suspiciously deep voice.
But Robin, I mentioned this before, you'd be very good at talking books. Very good at that. Very good.
Is there a market?
I mean, tonight.
Is there a market? Is there a market for that?
I would imagine. I would imagine we could talk to Kevin. You know, Kevin has everything, you know, and because he's blind. I mean, he has. And I have to send out a special thank you to Kevin.
That was my first work study job in college, reading college textbooks onto tape.
Oh.
Get out.
Well, my.
No, it's true.
I mean, there's huge, huge library for that. Huge, huge.
It was like getting to take extra courses. The only problem was when they asked me to do a math text, and I was like, I quit. I am not going to sit here and try to translate and try to do VO work for an algebra book. Because I was busy. I was a little freshman in college, and I was busy failing algebra at the time.
Oh, you were math.
So the only thing I was competent, the only thing I was competent to do in that regard was to press record on the cassette deck and say, be an English major like me. Because this algebra shit's for the birds.
Well, it's too bad that you didn't have Alexa at that time. I mean, Alexa will help you with anything.
Oh, I don't think even she, I don't think even she could have helped me. No, I'm past help where that's concerned. I managed to pass Algebra 2 in summer school after ninth grade, and mathematics and I never spoke again. No, I take that back. I managed to make a D in geometry/trig the next year, and then we were done.
But see, geometry, that's not really math. That geometry makes sense. It's logic.
No, it didn't make any sense to me. I was, no.
I understand. But why
look, it was, look, here? Todd, it was after lunch.
Oh, well, forget about it. Okay, I get it. Well, yeah, you know, M&M don't mix.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'd be all, you know, I'd just be sitting there all hungry.
I'd be pissed off. Some of my friends would do that, and I'm like, man, I cannot. Don't even ask me that, you know, how many cigarettes are. I don't know. But you know, it's so funny, man. Going back, well, VO, you know, I have to do VO at work, but that's not the point. When you were talking about doing, I lost my train of thought.
Well, I was just going to say it was enough of a struggle dealing with the X and Y axis, and they added in the Z axis, and I'm like, oh, come on!
X, Y, what? Well, you got
my parabolas looked like amoebas.
But it's not like doing a quadratic equation, or it's not like, you know, discrete mathematics. But see, once again, look, when I found out, oh God, statistics that can get me through. You know, I never knew I would love it. You know, because I was like, oh God, this is weird. Yeah. But
let me ask you, did one of my kids is close to graduating to move on to her master's, but what's holding her back is a class on statistics. Just cannot get that down. And see, I don't even know how to do decimals. I mean, I do, but that was a, you know, huge piece that it was not part of my cognitive ability to be able to grasp, you know, but we find different ways in which we, you know, can come into higher learning by, you know, sensitivities or intuitive or, you know, spiritual. I mean, those are all, there's so many, we have so many aspects of ourselves, so many, you know, to be able to expand and grow upon. And, you know, when I can't grasp something, there's someone in my life that comes along and is able to kind of help with that, and that's what the two of you do.
The beauty of graphing. See, you know what? It'll finally click. Just ask him to keep doing frequency tables until he sees the patterns, because it looks mundane and it means, like, they make you do it the long way first. So, you know, they're not, now, especially now, you can do it, you know, the software does it. You got to do it the long way, and it will make you understand, how this stuff works.
See, we've all got our we've all got our crosses. Randy Radar said, "I was an awful speller. Poor me, I had to do two undergraduate, what's the plural of theses, to get my degree. They didn't have spell check back then. I was good at math, and then I took Diffie Quest in college and nearly flunked it. Oh, differential equations." I mean, I know what it is. I know what the words are, but I got nothing for, no. That's some kind of calculus kind of creepy stuff.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. All right, we're going to get out of here now.
Well, I have to say.
Yeah, Jude.
Well, I was just going to say parting is such great sorrow. But thanks. Thanks so much.
I would say adieu till it be morrow.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, and by the way, one last thing. Lee in New York, taking the Christmas tree down, my Jewish opinion, take it down before it's a fire hazard.
Definitely.
That. Y'all have a good night. Jude, it was delightful hearing from you. Todd, it is always a pleasure hearing from you. I hope folks enjoy our conversations as much as I do. And I'm pretty sure they do. And I will bid you both adieu, and I'll do the closing announcements and stuff like that. Things that I probably should have done with at the beginning of the program.
Okay, well, good night to you, Robin. Good night. Hey, Todd, thank you again. Thanks for that lifeline on Monday. Okay, take care.
All right, bye now. See you, Todd.
Bye.
And the announcement, again, Podbean sucks. That's where I upload the program, usually, until my unlimited uploads get limited toward the end of the month. Funny how that never used to happen. But now it does. But anyway, until then, the program goes up at whiterosesociety.org under the Kincaid subheading every night. Every night. And so I hope that folks don't think I've just gone and up and disappeared or anything. I haven't. It's just that, well, Podbean sucks. And here we are closing in on 500,000 downloads. Not shabby. But anyway, that's what that is. And let me say thank you to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to those of you who participate by the U.S. Postal Service. Thank you to those of you who participate by Venmo. Thank you to each and every one of you who jump in a la carte during the conversations. Thank you so much. Thank you so very much. I hope to have some big news by the time I'm on the air tomorrow. I'm really hoping to have some big news. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging with the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you so much. And thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. The fundraising goal for tomorrow will be 1048 to finish January. That means we're a little bit behind. But thanks, Gino. Thanks so much for getting us to where we are. And thank you as well to Earther and everybody that jumps in. Thank you. To John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Twenty plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Keep up with the news. Don't rub horse paste on your feet or anything like that. Don't drink your own pee. Don't eat dirt. Do get your KN95 masks and wear them religiously. Use your hand sanitizer liberally. Keep your social distance. 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. For God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you talking about, did you know how my child has never been to school without a mask on, and they can't breathe, avoid that maggot Karen, that independent woman, like the plague, because she is. Oh, and we'll probably talk about the Joe Rogaine versus Neil Young Spotify thing tomorrow on Friday on the Front Porch. That seems like really good Friday on the Front Porch material. I can't wait. Later.